This episode of the Seabros Fishing Podcast is brought to you by Monahans Marine. We recently partnered with Monahans and are excited to be working with a local marine business that has been serving the South Shore of Massachusetts since 1961. For decades, the crew at Monahans has been helping generations of boat owners with outboard parts, boat service, marine equipment, and fishing tackle. Their professionalism and passion for being on the water has made them one of the most reputable boating headquarters in the Northeast. Monahans is located on Washington Street in Weymouth, and they are currently a Jones Brothers and Tidewater Boats retailer and have the most well-stocked inventory of Yamaha outboards, parts, and rigging in Mass. The entire staff and crew of technicians have decades of experience, and as a recent addition, Monahans has built and rigged out a brand new 4,000-square-foot offshore and inshore fishing tackle shop. They are fully stocked with everything needed for offshore canyon fishing, nearshore bluefin tuna fishing, striped bass fishing, and more. We're excited to be able to use this new space as a home base to maintain our own tackle and charter fishing fleet, as well as use it as a spot to film some upcoming podcasts and workshops. As a part of this partnership, Monahans has been generous enough to give all listeners a discount on anything in their store and facility. So when shopping at Monahans, if you use promo code MBG24 at checkout, you'll receive 10% off any purchase in their tackle or marine department. To learn more about Monahans Marine, their location, boat and engine inventory, or parts, visit monahansmarine.com. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Mass Bay Guides. Mass Bay Guides is our family-run charter fishing fleet that's based out of Scituate, Massachusetts. We've been providing anglers with the ultimate fishing adventure for over 20 years. Whether you're looking to put together a multi-boat corporate fishing trip, a trip for your family, or you're an avid angler looking to catch a giant bluefin tuna, our crew will do anything it takes to make sure you and your friends and your family have a great day on the water. To book a trip with us, please visit the Mass Bay Guides website, www.massbayguides.com. You can search prices, trip information, and get the latest reports and links to our social media pages there. You can also find us directly on Facebook and Instagram and just search Mass Bay Guides. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Black Oak LED Lighting. Black Oak LED manufactures high-quality LED lighting at a reasonable price for the fishing, boating, hunting, and military communities. If you're looking to upgrade the lighting system on your boat, Black Oak LED provides many different options of marine-grade lighting, including cockpit spreader lights, LED light bars, undergunnel lights, and underwater lights. We've had Black Oak LED lighting on both of our boats for several seasons now, with zero failure, zero issues. They're an essential tool for us to help ensure safe rides home to and from our fishing grounds in low light and poor visibility conditions. And their series of marine spreader lights are also a great tool for getting bait fish to school around your boat in the dark. If you're re-rigging your boat or outfitting a new vessel, check out Black Oak LED for your lighting systems. Make sure to use the promo code GIANTBLUEFIN for 20% off your order. This episode is brought to you by Afuera Coffee Company. Afuera Coffee Company was started by and for people who not only love exploring the outdoors, but care deeply about restoring and preserving our environments and habitats so everyone can enjoy them for years to come. To help work towards this, they donate 5% of all sales to charities and organizations currently donating to Captains for Clean Water. Everything done at Afuera has sustainability as the main focus, sourcing beans from certified Rainforest Alliance farms, using compostable coffee bags, mailers, stickers, packaging, and of course, donating a portion of sales, not just profits, to protect Mother Nature. It is their dream that through many small decisions, such as choosing and brewing your go-to coffee, that we can all make a substantial difference in the health and cleanliness of our world. Afuera is doing it right and makes a tasty product. If you want to give Afuera Coffee a try, visit afueracoffee.com and use promo code MassBayGuides for 15% off your first order. Thank you for tuning into the Seabros Fishing Podcast. We have two returning guests on this episode of the podcast. Captain Mark DeCabia is back with his good friend and first mate aboard the Rebel, Brian Shark Yunkin. If you haven't listened to the previous episodes with these guys, make sure you do. Mark has decades of offshore fishing experience, and he and Shark make a hell of a crew. In this conversation, we talk about everything from Northeast cane fishing to who Mark considers to be legends in the fishery. It's always a pleasure to sit down and talk with fishermen of Mark and Shark's caliber. Without further ado, please welcome Captain Mark DeCavia and Brian Shark Yunkin. Welcome to the Sea Bros Fishing Podcast, where we follow three words of wisdom. You can't catch them if you don't have a hook in the water. Always trust your instincts. And the last, you'll just have to keep listening. Stay tight.
Am I coming off or what? Get that down. Showing it on that rock.
So Shark just came from Panama.
Last night.
You just came from catching the Olympic of all species.
The Atlantic eel with spears. Sails.
It is, like, it's nice being down there. I don't know.
It's different.
It's a lot of effort.
It's fun. It's different.
I respect the guys that are down there. It's a team sport. I do. And the guys that do it down there are some of the best guys, some of the best crews around. You know, you got John Louie just won on Sandman. I mean, they're down by two fish with 15 minutes to go, and they catch a quad in the last 15 minutes to win. I mean, that's – talk about a team sport for a couple hundred thousand dollars. You got Andrew on the fish on. He's hard charger, and Artie Sapp and Carullo, and there's a lot of good guys now.
So. Mark DeCavia, Rebel.
Sail fisherman. No.
What, yeah, you hold your own, though, I bet.
No, I could catch him. I did a lot of sail fishing, and I learned a lot of tricks from Brett and got to fish with Ray Rocher growing up and a lot of good guys. But I can catch him when it's time to count, but I wouldn't say it's my forte.
Yeah.
You know, but it is addicting when you catch a lot in one day and you want to catch them. It catches on you. It grows on you. But it's a lot different than the fishery that we have in the Northeast.
Yeah. What's, like, the deal there with, like, trying to figure out where the fish are? Is there, like, a theory behind it?
You have every day, you know, obviously Florida, you have an edge that is usually pushed in from east, you know, and it goes from about 90 out to 250 feet. And it's basically a green water edge to a blue water edge. And that's where, obviously, the bait congregates, where there's a current change, where there's a blue water change, and that's where the fish are going to sit on one side of the edge.
Yeah.
And obviously it's rough conditions, and the rougher you have it, the better off the biting, they're going to bite.
Is it just rougher in general, or is it, I know.
Florida's pretty rough. I'll give them that. Like, you could be 4 or 5 miles off the beach and it could be horrific.
But is it a specific wind direction?
You want north wind, due north.
Yeah.
And, you know, you want north current, you know, running up. So it's basically running right into it. So it stands straight up. And when it gets rough like that, you have something, a condition that the fish turn to, and we call them tailors, where you look up the wave and here they come surfing down sea. And that's what happened last week with that big bite. You know, they were all tailing down sea. You had a swell and wind and, you know, big current. And here they come.
So north running tide, they're using swell to move, and then they're feeding into the tide, basically?
Yep, they're feeding into the tide, and they're surfing down sea, you know, catching every wave, and that's where the bait is. And it's easier for them to feed like that makes when sense. It's rough.
Yeah. You know?
But rough conditions, it's tough for them. It's hard on the boat. It's a very, like I said, it's a team sport. It's just different than our fishing. It's just... You know, we look at it differently, and then they look at us like we're out of our fucking minds.
Yeah. You know, because they're ice fishing.
Yeah, like, but yeah, not even that. Like, when they're like, it's cold out, I'm like, cold. Like, we have 25 other crazy conditions we have to deal with. You know, fog, wind, rain, you know, obviously they have it too, but we're sometimes 120 miles off the beach.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, six. And I always said, like, oh, it's so bad. In 1 hour, we could jog home.
Totally.
1 hour, we could put the boat in gear. When you're in, like, I don't know, Lydonia or East of Beach, and you got to be like, oh, it's 16 hours home. Great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just like when we fished on George's, it was the same thing. I remember being out there when Brett, who had a very good podcast. Brett.
That's an inside joke here that I just love.
Oh, yeah. Brett, that's not your eulogy. Okay. You're not getting old. Cut the shit. All right. But there was times that I was out there and Brett was there and we were there. Like I said, he was there for 7 days. We were there a couple of days, 5 days, and then it would get really rough. And you could only go 4 or 5 knots, so you were better off staying out there.
Yeah.
Until, you know, it lightened up, and then you could be able to make time coming in.
What was your most memorable day out there?
Memorable day? I mean, that whole first year, like Brett said, I remember Brett talking to him after he did the first trip, and me and Evan Millis, who had the head hunter, we were on our way. When they first got there, they called us, and me and Evan literally assembled as fast as we humanly could. I drove the truck. He drove the boat alone from Montauk after coming from New Jersey. And getting out there and no one's there. And we're like, okay, are we even in the right spot? You know? Like, we've never been there. And everyone at that point was already on their way home because it was so fast. And Evan, we just stopped the boat and we're just like looking around. There's like three shearwaters. And I'm like, oh, we just drove 20 hours and we're here and there's nothing here. And just like Brett said, there was like piles and piles of fish. Like 200 fish must have come under the boat. And that whole first year, 2010, we never even put a sinker on. So it was, I remember I literally took a herring and just fed out of my hand. I remember I peeled it all 30 feet and it just ripped out of my hand. I'm like, oh, you know. And then from that moment on, we did this pretty much as I think we did 19 trips and, you know, with three a day right through October on a little Mitchell Cove. That's 36. Insane. Yeah. 37 Mitchell Cove.
Where are you living out of?
We're all living, let's say we're all living in Sacquatucket.
Okay.
Living at a Brax restaurant and whatever we could offload, but it was definitely a camaraderie there. There was some of the best guys on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
Going in and out and just watching people fight and fit. Didn't matter. You want to break one off, break one off. You want to just 220, 280, 300. Didn't matter that whole first year. There was fish that have never been seen humans. Yeah. They were all the big, you know, they weren't all huge ones, but they were the big dumb ones. They were like scallop eater or dragger fish where you could just let out, you know, 530 extra hard and with a 7698B and gaff him in the head, you know. But it didn't matter. I mean, what we used, but there was just at first light would be crazy amount of fishing. And, you know, it was just the whole thing with that was just timing. So you were there at first light because it would be a big bite right at first light. You try to catch at least two, and then you usually pluck one more around 10. Hopefully you get to dock before midnight. You know, another 12-hour steam and then back out.
Yeah. So. Were they all just grubbing ground fish or did you see like epic surface action as well?
You just saw them like kind of like what pogies do. You just see them like kind of milling on the surface. You're like, oh, look over there. There's 300 tunas just hanging out. You know, like, and like they were never disturbed.
It's crazy.
You know, and it was pretty nuts. And that was the year I was getting married. And I remember I'm like texting my wife, like, because we didn't have sat phone. There was only a sat phone. So I wasn't ever talking to her. So it only, when I had the service, she's like, you are going to be home for the wedding, right? I'm like, I think so. And I remember getting in. I got in like early that morning, jumped in my truck, went home, got married. I literally had such a ripping hangover after my wedding, like kind of coming to. And then I had to catch a ferry to meet Evan back up there because he didn't stop. He just kept fishing the whole time and jumped back on the boat. And I remember, you know, a certain period, it was just nuts. The whole thing. It's an experience. You know, I've been very, very lucky. I have a lot of different experience traveling all over, but that's something that can't even describe.
Probably won't. I mean, it may not happen again.
No. I mean, you could go out there and see unreal fishing. You could, but you're not going to be able to keep them. Right. You know, and obviously sustainability of the whole species is very, very important. We've seen the best, but it kind of, this new kind of fishing that has developed is very, very tough, you know, on everyone.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't, unfortunately, if you can't cook it, stab it, sell it, you know, most people don't want to be
involved. Posted on Instagram.
Posted on Instagram. Yeah. Like,
that should have been first.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, most people don't.
So he's all right.
He's good.
Respect the industry. Like, I was a little kid and I got to go up there, you know, used to wait, just like you guys did, wait 12, 15 hours for a mark, or then tied with slack and here they come, finally get a bite.
Yeah.
Now it's like, you just let a live bluefish go and you can literally go anywhere. We have fish outside our inlet that we've discovered in the last pretty much year that we can go catch at will now.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Is anybody fishing them, or is it kind of like
We just, but we're on an island. So unless you have a home for it, there's not a buyer or an offload. Hmm. It's more of a pain in the ass. Just let them go. I'd rather watch them swim.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, no one wants a 700 dresser, you know?
Yeah.
No one wants.
Some of those dragger fish were enormous.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of.
I don't ever want to deal with one ever again.
No.
That big.
It took us 2 days.
Yeah. We kept one of the ones and we ended up cutting it up, and we cut up a 600 pounder. And remember me and Shark in the cut room for literally just felt like we were locked in there, like in a meat locker.
2 days.
Two full days flaying this thing. And I'm like, who would ever want to do this? And I said to my boss, like, oh, maybe we'll go out and go get another one. I go, absolutely not. You know, you're the bad guy. You know what I mean? We're on our knees cutting the thing. You know, you need the samurai sword.
Everything.
You know, you need everything.
The steaks off a fish that big. We got a few from a fish we broke down in PEI. Like, fucking quarter the size of this table.
Yeah. If remember the Flintstones? They used to put that thing on the side of the car? Yeah. If you can imagine the Bronto-sized loin, you know, whatever, I'm like, Shark, here, hold the loin. And you're going to, like, hold it. It's not light. It's 150 fucking pounds,
yeah.
You know, and you're trying to hold on and manage it. And you're like, what the – ah, yeah. You know. And then here. And then you got to go through your phone and be like, come get this thing. I don't care. It's on my porch. I'm not delivering it. You know. Anything. It's so much meat.
And it's too much.
It's meat. Way too much meat.
Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, I'm done with this. And that tuna smell.
Oh,
I'm sure, dude. You know, you get it gets on your hands.
I can't even eat it.
Yeah, anymore. I don't eat tuna until really the fall.
Yeah.
Like, I'll have like a poke bowl or make something, but it's like only if we catch a big eye. And I'm like, that's about the last thing. I want like a skirt steak. And
I take enough for one meal home if the charter lets us take some meat home.
Yeah,
that's it. That's all I need. Yellowfin's a little different for me, though, because we don't get to eat it all the time like you guys.
See, it's not – like, I'd rather eat bluefins raw, so it's like – obviously, we only get to eat it a couple times when we're going bluefin, but yellowfins and the big eyes. And
Yeah, big eyes.
Yeah, we try to eat a good amount of them, you know, but it's –
big eyes good. I've only had it a couple times because usually you're selling them and all that.
There's good ones. We've had some good ones. Just like anything, we've had good ones. We've had – bad ones, you know, the ones are like, wow, that was delicious, you know, obviously wahoos, whatever else else you're going to eat, but.
Sailfish.
Yeah, no sails.
I ate a sail.
I know you did.
It was actually wasn't bad.
Sail wrapped and died.
they ate sails in the Pacific, you know, it's a fish, you know, I say it to everyone, like a skate is a perfect example. It's probably ugly, you know, an ugly fish in the ocean. You know, it's served in every 5-star restaurant in New York City.
Yeah.
One of the few fish that's a Michelin, you know, a skate, you know, something that's 30 cents a pound.
Disgusting.
Disgusting. And it's like, it's
garbage fish.
It doesn't taste like a scallop. So let's just stop with that. I've caught hundreds of thousands of pounds of skates in my life, monk fishing. They taste nothing alike. You know, I don't know where that myth came from, but that's the pretty much misconception. Everyone's like, oh, they cut scallops out of it. Like, I don't know how they would even make this thing into a scallop. The meat looks nothing alike.
No.
Or those
I'd imagine it would cook a lot different too.
Yeah. There's like a stringy type meat, then there's like a steak type meat, and it's nothing alike.
Mm.
So
that's awesome.
You know, obviously the fishing has just gone better and better and better. Every year we keep saying, all right, when's the pinnacle? But it does show the management has worked. Of certain size, you know, but I'm sure you guys wonder all the time too. Like, all right, we see the super big ones,
right?
We see the uncatchables, we see the 100 inchers. Where are all the 65 inchers? Where are all the 60 inchers? Like,
it's weird. They come through in spurts. Like, was it last year or 2 years ago? We had the troll bite,
yeah.
And that was just a shit ton of like 50 to 57 inch
but it
fish.
Was 10 days.
Yep.
10 days long. And then they were kind of gone. And they were down in Chatham.
Yep. We didn't have any.
Yeah, we don't get any of those any size of, fish.
Yeah, we don't.
But you used to, right?
Yeah. Oh, there used to be a bread and butter. It used to be south of the Coimbra in the springtime in June. To it used to be a whole month that you could go troll them, and it was very good for like a guy starting out because you can go 30 miles and catch tunas.
Isn't there a pot of fish south of you guys though? Like, aren't they like the Jersey guys getting into them?
Oh yeah, there's a big popping, jigging, and popping type crew. And that's that whole area from Texas Tower, all through the Chicken Canyon.
So there's like a gap now.
There's definitely a gap.
Yeah.
And then you cross a line basically south of Montauk, and then it just turns everything size large.
Yeah.
What were the eels like down there the last year or two?
It definitely have stopped since they. You know, I don't want to start. Political wind farms, but once they started drilling and disturbing the bottom, the eels don't set up. And the same goes for our monkfish, and the same goes for all the gill netters. You know, it's definitely changed the way we fish and how we fish. And obviously, you know, whales, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, so, but
a couple more just died, right?
Yeah.
Yesterday?
Yeah. You know whose house that was?
Isn't that Matt Smalley's house?
That's Mr. Smalley's house. Yes.
Mr. Smalley's house.
Under the dock. Under the dock.
That's dance. Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah.
It's insane.
Oh, yeah. That was a good conversation, you know? So.
Do you think those things will ever be like Louisiana?
You know, I'm not going to say it's probably not, because unless the water gets there, what happened, I guess in Louisiana, the water's always there. It's always semi-warm where most of them are. So I think that's a totally different fishery where the, you know, I've talked to a lot of guys there, and, you know, they said those big Allisons they catch now are 60 to 90 feet in the green water. So it's not a.
Yeah, it's like October in that muddy, nasty water.
Right now. Yeah, right now. Blake's railing them, you know, and they're catching them casting. They're learning from us how, you know, we catch them up here and, you know, and they're adapting to using, you know, that type of stuff.
Seems like it's like a steady pick when they're doing that. Yeah, they catch it's like, not like 15
no,
porkers
they catch like,
catching a couple a
they
day.
They catch 1 to 3 nice ones a day that they land, and they couple days they catch a lot of 40 to 80s that you don't really see because they don't probably see that advertising. But but it's just our fishery has just changed. I mean – but going back to the inshore bluefins, we were leaving the tri-state this year, and obviously we were all very well hungover, you know, ripping hangover. And
sharks still hungover.
Yep.
We'll get back into that in a second. Yeah.
And my boss goes, "Oh, can we go catch one?" And I'm like, "I guess we can, you know, like I was, you know, we could go do whatever you want. You know what I mean? It's your boat." So, and so we go make bait, and I'm like, "All right." I'm like, "Oh, I got to get all the giant stuff back out." So bust out the old, you know, 180 liters and whatever I got.
Did you catch bluefish?
So if that would have been an organized plan, that would have been, this is not an organized plan. This is just, let's go catch one. And I'm like, "Oh." And I don't like being, not outgunned, but I don't want to be late to the party. I want to be organized. I wanted to be there. If we're gonna go, I want to be there at 4:30 in the morning.
Right, same. Yeah.
You know, just like you guys. You're off the dock at 3, you're anchored up, you already got bait, and let's go, and you're gonna get your bite in the first hour, you know, on the first morning. But nope, here we go. I remember it was like 8:50, because real a great start. We go make bait, we get there, everyone's like, "It's over." I'm like, "Oh God. Now I'm just gonna sit here, and it's August, and we're gonna bask in the sun." You know, water's 78 degrees south of Block Island. There's people fluke fishing right next to us. One guy yelling at us to get out of his fluke drift, you know. And I'm like, "Oh, here we go." You know, now I'm angry. We've all been on the boat for 5 days. We didn't place. I'm just pissed off because I'm a terrible sore loser. And I'm like, now the baits start dying. And I'm sure Shark and Jimmy see me start flaring my hands, going fucking crazy because the bait's dying. I'm getting angry. My boss is looking at me. I'm like, "Ah!" I'm screaming at everyone. Everyone knows not to say a goddamn word. And I'm like,
"Just let him go. Just let him go."
I remember Jimmy and Shark, they were whispering to each other, and I almost pulled the bolt out. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Why are you talking about me? You know? And the bait's dying, and I'm like frenzying out. And I'm racing, going back and forth, and then some guy like with his jigging rod hooks up right next to me. Now I'm completely coming unglued because I'm like a fish that I actually know how to catch.
Yeah.
And this guy in a pro line, nothing against pro lines, but he just happens to, you know, catch one right next to me. You know, fight it. Of course, they lose it. Things probably trailing around 300 yards of spectra all over the ocean.
Now. Oh, yeah.
I like race down to another spot, make my bait. Everyone, you know, like the guys can't catch the bait quick enough. So I literally rip the rod.
Now he's baiting.
I am.
And driving.
You
know,
yeah.
Bait fishing, driving. I'm like, no, you got to catch him like this. You snap the rod. You keep. So you every time you reel a mackerel up, you have five mackerels coming in. Every time. You know, so less drop. So we black out the pen. I Hasselhoff down there, race up the helm, and we're, you know, we're going 33 knots. It's only a couple miles. Everyone's saying, no one's saying a fucking word. And I like drive up to the first whale. I mark like 20 of them. I'm like, all right, this is it. Like, no one touch anything. I'll set out myself. And I remember I set the balloon rod, I handed the shark, and I'm setting the down rod out. And I'm like, oh, there's one off the bottom. Like, smash a sinker on the bottom, and definitely you can see the fish saw it on the way down, sinker hit. And I'm like, I watch a sinker just go slack. I'm like, all right, little fella. You know what I mean? You know, suck that one down. You know?
Got you.
I busted out some old saltwater hooks.
Oh, yeah.
Tarantinos. I was like, nope.
Those don't exist.
Yeah. No, they don't exist. And no, Brett, you can't have any more. And I remember I'm like, I watch the sinker slack, and I'm like, oh, you're mine. You know what I mean? I just let it bounce. I'm like, oh, keep bouncing down there a little. Keep choking. I just threw the drag up, and we caught like a nice 85-incher and a couple minutes. You know, wasn't a couple minutes, but 40 minutes standing up.
That's sweet.
Yeah. Sick. Yeah. So
it's a perfect size fish for standing up.
For standing up. Yeah. I have this aspiration of catching one like in there because it's shallow water.
Yeah.
Like I want – oh, it's what really want – well, I'm not going to reel it. I'm going to make shark reel it in. But, I want to see, like,
no problems.
Obviously, doing a lot of billfish and learning how to, like, drive a boat differently and, you know, keeping certain tensions on it and slacking the fish off. Like, I really want to see if we can catch a big one in shallow water quick, like less than 10 minutes.
Definitely can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you get them to eat the right
less than 10 minutes.
No, but
you definitely can.
If you
also
have the right
can't.
Angle. Like,
yeah.
Like,
you can get on him.
Yeah, there's not many people in this room. He shark fights every single thing. And I'll say, not many people fights as much stuff standing up than he does.
Yeah.
Fights every single fish over and over and over, no matter where we are. So I'm like, all right, I think we could do this. You know what I mean? Then I'm like thinking, I'm like, what happens if we hook these like 115 inchers and sharks could be like crippled to the back of the boat on a 70? But I think you could, you know, if you know driving on it, like don't pull – super hard. I think sometimes you guys realize that when you pull super hard, they pull harder. Yeah, you know,
for sure.
And I think if you got the right fish that wanted to stay up, you could definitely do it. Yeah. The problem is when you get a fish that doesn't want to stay up, even in like what's the shallowest we've been, 60 feet, probably 70 feet.
Yeah, we did a 120 in 80 feet of water in Canada. And took us 3 hours.
Yeah, I'm sure he's just gonna race around. All over.
The hardest part is like even in pinning yourself in the corner, you're still
the rod's loaded up.
It's the whole time. So like that 50 to 75 foot mark is so hard to fucking break on a fish. That's
but what you're saying is keep him so light that he might just resurface.
Well, yeah. Like that's when you should learn. Like I want to do it on a closed day if we're not going to keep the fish, but you could learn like, oh, let me just throw the reel and free spool or back it off.
What's he do?
Yeah, what happens? Like I always thought like when we fished on George's, because we did it a lot, if we hooked doubles and we even hooked a triple, we threw one reel and free spool and everyone came up gift wrapped.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we used to call it when they all got tail wrapped. I'm like, oh, here comes the gift. I'm like, what happens if you have the heavy leader, you have a long leader, and you just let them tail wrap themselves? You know, when they're doing that totally burning run, if you got the balls to throw the reel in free spool and, you know, he's burning obviously away from you, basically right off the back of the boat, not on an angle or anything, you might get him and then lock it up and put a lot of drag on it. So when he turns, you could get him over the top fin.
Yeah.
But obviously the leader's got to be heavy enough.
I think you could do it. If you could get him tail wrapped, you could definitely do it in 10 minutes. I mean, we've
We've even had if he can just get it under his belly.
90, 100 inches.
Get it under his belly. But it'd be something
interesting to know, like, that you could do if, you know, there's certain fish that are just pains in the ass. Devil ones. Like, we fought one in the canyon for 5 hours one night, you know, and I fought, like, he fought it for an hour. Jimmy fought it for an hour. Then I got pissed off. And I fought for like an hour.
I sense a comment.
It's not that big. I don't know what you guys are doing. I'm like,
I'm terrible.
I sense a common denominator of your success. You go like this, this ebb and flow of like stress, and then Mark just goes, the next level volcano stress, and then shit gets done. And you catch the fish.
You know, I'm a very outgoing person, and I will help anyone.
That's the name of this podcast, Volcano Stress. Volcanic Stress.
Everyone should know that I am not a nice person on my boat. and I don't actually speak anymore. I don't, but everyone knows when I raise my hands and don't say anything.
So what do? You like spirit
hands? I just throw my hands like kind of, yeah, like that. Even my boss does because he makes fun of me. He throws the hands up and he goes, oh, you
boy. And silent and you're just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. And I'm ready to like derail, completely check off the reservation. Because, you know, I don't like that. That's not, I want to catch everyone, every single thing, you know, don't do this, do that. Or when someone does something, it doesn't have to be on my boat, but I see it. I'm like, oh, if they would have did that, it would have changed the whole dynamic of it. And that's, we've learned from that. And that's how like putting a team together on a boat is very, very important. You know, I don't have to actually, honestly, the videos without like music would pretty much be the most boring videos of us catching like a big, big eye because there's no talking. No one says a word. Everyone knows what to do.
Except everyone knows how fast it can be over.
Yeah.
If you have that expectation, the verbal comms is at a minimum.
Yeah. And that's it. And everyone's having a good time and you keep morale high, not when stress is high. You know, it's the same thing over like in a tournament. We get our bite. I know we're going to get our bite. I know we're going to get it. Our tackle's 2000% because we psychotic. Yeah. You know, we do so many different tests and everything. And Shark and I are just prepare over and over and over and over again. And it's pretty much boring when people come with us like, that's it. You know, it's not some epic battle. It's just a very fluid type of scenario.
Yeah. But that's why you're so concerned.
For a lot of your fishing too, like once you land them, you're not done yet.
No,
immediately like the fish is dragged to the door. I've seen some of your videos. The fish drags to the door and it's just like baits are already going back in. No one's even touched the fish.
Yeah. I'm screaming in one of the videos.
Something in the water.
If you want to listen to a good video, the video where we catch a winner in a Montauk challenge, Jimmy, who is worked me first before Shark, he's on the rod. Okay. And if you listen to the verbal, I'm screaming at Jimmy to get a tail rope on it. There's five guys on the boat. I'm screaming at the guy who's
fighting the fish.
Who just fought the fish.
Fought the fish under tremendous amount of stress because he knows it's worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I'm like, get a fucking tail rope on it. You know, I'm screaming at him, you know? And meanwhile, he's completely gassed, you know, because he's got anxiety.
He can't even pick the tail rope.
Yeah, no, I got my partner, Richie, in the gill letter. He's a full-time commercial fisherman. And, like, you know, you let him deal with that. And I'm like, I'm not going to yell at him. I'm yelling at Jimmy. Shark and Teddy have the gaff in it. So I'm like, who am I going to yell at? I'm going to yell at Jimmy, you know? So it's, it's pretty.
What was the biggest big eye this year?
We didn't catch any big ones this year.
Were there many big ones caught?
There was a few. Like
November.
November, obviously, Shark caught got the real one and like part of one.
323.
Oh, was that
petty? Yeah,
that's a big fish.
That's a hammer.
Yeah, that was cool.
323.
That was a good one.
Was that trolling dead bait or
dead bait? Yeah.
Wow.
You get any daytiming?
No, we didn't do much daytiming. We had the big eye fishing was definitely different this year because our biggest underlying problem is we only have one eddy. That's a big
problem.
Heard
that from like three guys now.
Yeah. It's a big problem. Like I grew up when I was around the Canyon River, we had 10, 12 eddies a year sometimes, or at least minimum five. But this year, that eddy just sat there in Veach and just gets pulverized. And so the fish don't refill back in and there's not new water and not stuff charged up. So you got to be on that front line when the big eyes come.
Yep.
And if not, you're not going to catch them. We had one shot of like, I think we went 5 for 7 with Mike's son, Ellis, which was very good in the dark. But no, there wasn't too many opportunities where there was a lot of fish caught, considering the amount of effort. That's what I look at. I look at effort per yield.
Yeah.
You know, you have, look at the Tri-State, you have 100 good boats. You have 100 boats this year, 98 boats. 30 boats are as very, very top crews, very good. They get the bite, they're going to catch it. And if you exploit that at number of days and hours fishing versus what's actually caught, it's nothing in the scheme of it.
I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of people ask us that, like, daily decision-wise, doing that math and figuring out spots to go to.
Oh, yeah.
Based on intel. I think a lot of people just get pigeonholed on, you know,
whatever the best spot is.
Exactly.
There is no spot.
No.
I can tell you, you know, and to me, I should know better every year. I mean, it's like a fourth quarter decision, especially during a tournament. Like, do you go where the water is? And you know there's going to be one there. And you got to battle 40 boats. Or do you go sit by yourself where the water was and they could just be living there on the bottom? And that's what happened pretty much this year. It was, we went to Veach where we've been fishing for the prior 3 weeks and it's been good. And I should have known to go to West Atlantis. And one boat went to West Atlantis that I know of. He was all by himself and he caught a 240.
Hmm.
You know,
he was seems like that one. Canyon always produces a big guy in every tournament.
Yep. Yeah. West Atlantis is one of those spots that if you were to say, you know, you have one spot to go, I would say I would go there.
Yeah.
The Dip and the Hudson used to be our jam. It just hasn't been there. There was a few this year caught in the Dip and a few caught in the tails during our local tournament. But it's weird how certain spots, and obviously that's all water driven, because they come with the water and then they lay on the bottom the whole time that, from the most of the data that we can gather about big eyes and how they act in certain parts of the moon and how they act and they move around. And but another issue that we have no ilex offshore. It's a big problem. There's no squid offshore.
Just so weird because what was it like 3 years ago? They were absurd.
We had
too much squid. Too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And I know a lot of the draggers personally. I know a lot of those trip boats. Very good friends of a lot of them. And, you know, they were doing massive hauls. They were doing 100,000 pounds in 2 hours of fishing where they haul back and the boat, 100-foot boats are stopping because the bag is so big.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And then, and it's not because they're overfishing. It's just a cyclic matter of how squid spawn and the size of the squid. And, you know, it comes and goes. But you take those guys out of the equation. And then you have all the guys off Nantucket catching on Lolligos, and then the squid closes because they all caught too many because everyone's fishing on one thing.
Yeah.
Kind of the same principle as our open and closed days now. You have so much effort December 1. You know, you see videos of like 80 boats out by you guys. Like that's...
Dude, it was like 140.
It was 140 the second day.
On just, I don't know, have you... You fished that wagon before,
yeah. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like the southwest corner, basically. Yeah.
There was 104 boats. On the shoal, 104. So
that's where we caught the one with Dan.
Yeah.
You know?
Which so, is, yeah. It was like a 3-mile space. 3x3, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yep. That's not fun.
Insane.
You know, and then there's just people, there's just anchors everywhere. Yeah, and they're
landing
just,
the fish.
Thank God everybody was drifting this time because people would be losing a lot of fish. But yeah. So even still, like you're having 4 boats move in one battle.
It was over
in December.
That biomass was there and it handled that pressure for three days plus like
a little bit. Night.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, the fish get so beat up seeing all the rods. And then if let's just say there's 100 fish caught, there's probably 300 hooked, maybe more.
Yeah.
You don't know because of the caliber of fishermen, you know, a lot of people that, you know, either getting into it and don't know how to fight them or, you know, it's good and bad. You know, there's people, there's a lot of fishermen now. You know, you go out and you know, a lot of the inshore bites, even our inshore fishing are, you know, I'm sure you guys see our inshore yellowfin and bluefin fishing south of Block Island is the best it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's actually supporting charter boats now.
So awesome.
Yeah. Which is good.
Yeah.
You know, when it gets people
into fishing,
in the fishing, because it's a lot closer. It's not canyon fishing, which is a whole different thing, but our canyon fishing's been slow because of that, because all the yellowfins, there's no squid, So where do they go? They go storm inside and go looking for sand eels and and the mush, whatever else they can.
It's kind of the tough thing about up here is like a new offshore fisherman. There's no like ladder to climb anymore.
There's no middle ground.
It's not like, oh, I'm going to go chase a 500-pound striped bass or, 100 inchers.
Yeah, right. You know? The same thing by us.
Yeah.
It really is. We have the middle level by us. Obviously, we have our very good inshore bottom fishing.
Yeah.
Sea bass and fluking. And then now we have, you take your baby steps. Then you're like in elementary and you go catch the 40 to 60 pounders outside of Coimbra. And you could do that. And that's very good because you don't have to go far. You don't need a big boat. The weather's very consistent. Mm. You can catch a good amount of fish in a short period of time. And then you got your canyon fishing, which is way more advanced than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Good mix. I want to go back to one thing you said that was interesting. You said you went 5 for 7 at night with big eyes.
Yep.
What do you do differently fighting a big wolf pack like that during the day versus at night? Do you do anything differently? Do you change your lights? Do you, like, what do you do?
Well,
communication is major.
Yeah.
I feel like at night you got to communicate where your line is, like how far out it is, like. It's not easy because you can't see where your line is. So it's tangles happen.
Are you locking some up and keeping some light, or are you kind of just fighting them all at the same time?
Kind of.
I mean, we have our methods. I just like bring. So, I like for someone listening, this is like a good topic. On,
And when we say at night, it could be at 3 a.m.
Right. That's what I mean. In the dark.
Low light conditions. It's all in the dark. It's all in the dark. They're a night feeder. So obviously we troll a different spread. You don't troll 11 rods in the dark. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
We found 5 to 6 rods, or maybe 7, is the most effective, especially hooking. Because when you usually hook one, they either come in the dark 2 different ways. The hog comes out. It's the lone wolf at 3:30, and they're all big, and it's a single bite, and you can focus on that one, or every rod goes – and in little, you have to be ready for anything. So hopefully your long riggers go. And lately, because every reel has 9,000 yards of spectra, just back your reel off. As long as they're hooked. So what I would do is the long riggers go and all the other rods are going. Usually what I do is I go up, I throw the drag up past strike a little bit, make sure the rod's loaded up, hooked, and then we just back it right off.
Okay.
And then just let them smoke away. Because once that hook is buried, back it off, let them swim, and let them just peel off maybe with like 5, 6, 7 pounds of drag. And they run off a shitload of line.
Pretty light drag.
Yeah. Shitload of line and let them go. Then work your way in. So if you hook one on a swimming plug, you hook one on a big lure or a big ballyhoo on a short rigger, those are the ones you want to get first.
Put some heat on.
Yeah.
Clearing your lines.
Are you putting more or less drag on fighting fish with swimming plugs, or the same?
This episode is sponsored by Costa Del Mar. If you didn't know already, Costa makes some of the best fishing sunglasses on the market. They have a ton of frame options and offer a wide variety of lens colors. And their 580 color enhancing polarized lens technology is tried and true. We are big fans of their blue mirror lenses for our offshore fishing charters and their green mirror lenses for inshore. They've stepped up their game big time. And they offer a great new line of performance fishing apparel. We've been wearing a lot of it the past few seasons on charters. We've found that all of it's well-designed, comfortable, durable, quick drying. It can handle a beating. To check out Costa's great selection of sunglasses, apparel, and wide variety of other products, visit CostaDelMar.com.
That depends. That type of situation, it depends. You pull a lot of hooks with swimming plugs.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, so, usually don't touch the drag. Yeah, that much.
Don't touch the drags. You know, that's usually 15 pounds, and then we go up to like 22, 24. We do fish way more drag than, because all the guys we have are obviously very well experienced. So I tell most people 18 to 20 is pretty much the average that anyone stand up with. We generally use 25 to 30 because we could pull on them. We know when to pull, when not to pull. Mm-hmm. There's a give and take. type relationship.
All your anglers, hand pressure. I'm sure they're all just very dialed.
Yep. So when I see, you know, the fish is starting to come and you can listen to any of the videos we take, you're like, all right, I see shark, let's go. And like shark will put it up one more notch on the reel, like just above strike, which is 31, 32, put the reel in low gear. And because I drive from the back of the boat and gaff all on the same side, mm-hmm. just so we don't have to tear apart our transom.
Yeah.
So when the
we won't go into
we, no, but no, it, that's professionalism. Everything should be taken off the side of the boat. There's absolutely nothing. Nothing good is landing off the back of the boat. No. You're in your prop wash. You know, regardless or not, someone's going to hit the side of the boat. You catch them tunas with gaffs. It is what it is. Have one side that's a bad side, but. If it's in the prop wash, you're going to pull the hook. If you have to put the boat in gear and the thing's laying in your wash, you have 2,700 horsepower, you put the thing in gear, all that water is right on the fish's face. So you could pull the hook. It could exponentially put way more drag on the fish's mouth.
That's a good point. Even think of.
Yeah. Yep. So you get him out of the clean water. I'm like, okay, shark, go. And when he goes, like when the swivel comes out and say we have a 25-foot leader and we're fighting multiples, he'll just start going like 32, 30. And I'm like, shovel, let's go and get the fish in a circle quick. And usually I got to take a shot, you know, very, very quickly to like get that one in. Mm-hmm. And I'll just hold him there depending on it, open the door, bring it in. But he knows to grab the next rod, right in line, harness in, and you use it as a assembly line.
Yeah.
You know, try to keep, all right, take one out to the right. Okay, next guy ready. Okay, good. If it's not at that good of an angle, obviously you got to take a little bit more time. But you just keep managing it appropriately. But obviously, your tangles and you got to watch which way the lines are going. And it's very hard, obviously, in the land seven.
Yeah.
And usually, you know, five or seven.
That's
very
good in the dark.
You know, in the dark. And I'm telling everyone, do you feel anybody? That's what I'm always saying is, do you feel something different? Doesn't have to be. You know,
just a little vibration.
A little vibration from the other way.
The game, what's in your mouth?
But
quick, what's in your mouth.
So it's pretty, and obviously my tension is very high at this point. So I'm like, do you feel something? No, I don't feel something. Meanwhile, I see the. You know, 4,000-foot bimini coming together with mono, spectral,
spreadabar.
A wind-on splice. Oh, yeah. Well, we don't...
You don't fish spreadabars at night?
Honestly, we've gotten away from fishing spreadabars completely.
Wow, coming from you. I feel like you've been one of the biggest... I mean, I'm sure you still fish them at times.
I'll tell you this.
We're side tangenting, but perfect.
No, but if you want to catch elephants, you want to catch numbers of fish. That's what I grew up doing. You want to catch a lot of fish, you fish... Bomb, put 12 of them out. Yep. Put eight bars out. You want to catch a lot of yellowfins? Be my guy. You know, I'm not into that. The owner's not into that at all. Mm. You know, only like one time a year he likes doing it. Literally one time. Yeah. It's like if we're inshore and you could bomb the bars out when you know at any given moment, like a 500-pound blue marlin comes up, you don't want it going near a spreadabar. It's a giant disaster.
Yeah.
You know, and he's going to get stung and then you don't even get a chance to pitch him a bait. Him need a plug, but you know, big eyes fishing is just a mess, you know, especially the way they eat. They're terrible eaters. They miss this thing 9 times out of 10. It's a fat kid at Christmas time with the M&Ms at your aunt's house trying to scoop all of them. Your cheeks are stuffed with them. And of course he's not going to get the hook bait. He's going to come up in the middle. Because it's coming from 300 feet away.
Yeah, he's going for the biggest target.
Yeah, biggest target. And, if I get the ones in the middle, I'm going to get some. But it doesn't mean they're going to get the hook bait every time. And that's what happens a lot. Hmm. The thing burns off. You're actually fighting it for 2 minutes. He's got clamped down on the squids. Huh. And all of a sudden, the hook pulls. And you're like, what the hell was that? You know?
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, the giant bluefins do that.
Yeah, they
just come up and they just try to eat a wing. They try to just kill the whole spreadabar once, and almost like they're just going to turn around and come back.
How good our crimping is. You're like, how did he rip the wing off? You know what I mean? Like, I think it's perfectly bench crimp, perfectly nitro pressed on there. Yeah. Like, how is that even possible? The thing is demolished.
Yeah.
So we've gotten away.
So no spreadabars at night.
Definitely no bars at night. Single baits, generally values, a couple swimming plugs. you know, a lure or two, but straight running stuff, and hopefully there's no weed.
I was just going to ask that. Do you have any single lure weed tactics?
No, there's nothing. The tactic
is reel it in.
No, you guys come in my area in the helm, I will rip your hands off. Go back there, the tension, and at night, there's no lights on. So you watch the Rogers. You watch the load. That's what I teach everyone. You know, you got to learn from even just the rod pulsing to if it all of a sudden just gets heavy.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It doesn't move.
Pulse, it just.
Yep, you got to.
So, are you fishing everything off the tips at night, or are you fishing?
No, we fish it.
I mean, you can still see in the riggers, though.
Yeah. I guess that's true. Yeah, kind of just, bends out.
Or you watch the mono on your halyard, even though it's locked up.
It stretches.
It just stretches a little tiny bit. That's all you're gonna. Or if you go to turn the handle, you know right away that there's grass on there, and there's nothing you could do about it. You know, you got to check it, and I think sometimes it helps trigger a bite. Because you're reeling it in, you're setting out. Sometimes you only have three rods out, and you go off, and you're like, oh, you know. And of course, I huff and puff when that happens. You know, like, do you guys ought to reel it in right now? Because sometimes you want them to eat certain rods. You don't want them. I would prefer they don't eat the long riggers. I want them that I ran them over, and they eat the flats or the plug you know, because then you're going to catch multiples. But when you catch one on the right long, you're like, oh. You missed them on the turn or whatever tack you were taking. And it's obviously then you have to navigate with people who have never navigated in an open ocean before, which is comical. Some boats have two colors of the same nav lights. They don't even
you run the boat at all?
Not really.
No. I don't let it at night because I'm... I mean, you guys have...
You want the responsibility.
You guys should take a trip with us and see how this actually...
This sounds like a podcast.
Yes.
How this actually progresses.
We could do a live podcast. Because I'm one of the
few people, like, I don't lay down at all. Like, we're there, and I'll tell Shark to go lay down, even though he doesn't want to go lay down. And it's happened a lot where I'm like, go lay down. He maybe lays down for... 4 minutes, 3 minutes. I'm like, we're on. Come back up.
What are you doing? Get back up here.
Get up here. I need you right now.
You just told me.
And obviously everyone needs sleep, but then I want him on the rod, or I want my boss on a rod. It is one or the other, like sword fishing especially. It's without fail. You know, sometimes you can't even get your boots on. I'm like, get out of here. I don't even care. You know, just start reeling on it because then it's the same routine. He's fighting it. Mike's fighting it. Everyone's harnessed in. Everyone has the appropriate harness. Which is important.
Very important.
Yeah. Everyone on my boat has their own. We have our own little like Marvel figures, whatever we got. Shark's got his insignia.
You know? No shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What does Jimmy have?
Well, I don't even know. What is it?
Mango? We call him Jimmy Mango. I can't say what's on Jimmy's. Richie's got a couple of extra zip ties, and he cut them so that every time I touch it, when I pull it out, it cuts my hand. Yeah. I go, why would you put this on here? You know?
Keep you away from my shit.
Yeah. Like he's got three of them, so it's like, you know? I'm like, all right.
That's fine.
But having everything ready, you know, you can't sit on our mezzanine. We have a nice mezzanine in the boat. There's five giant harnesses sitting there. No harnesses are sitting there. No one's sitting.
Yeah.
It makes a difference, though, when you hook 5-7 fish, you know, having everybody fitted for a harness matters.
Yeah, they should step into it and clip in. That's it. Harnesses, especially you're going to go big fish fishing, obviously, is a big...
you don't want to be fighting yourself when you're fighting the fish.
That's a huge pet peeve of mine.
It's crazy.
It's tough to get past on our trips, you know, because people aren't always decided on who wants to fight the fish, you know.
Most people run away from the rod.
Yeah. Well, they don't want to be the first... The speech I always gave on the canyon rider, don't give the guy with your white polo and the Sperry's from work, who's the extra on the list, the rod first.
Yeah.
He's not your go-to guy. Your go-to guy is whoever has the most experience just to land them so you build confidence.
Yeah.
You hook that first fish, you know, if you lose it, that's it. Days over.
Yeah.
Tyler's fucking go home. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, and then he gets stared at when no one gets a bite in the next three seconds after, you know, and then you got to wait a while to get a fish. So... You probably want to land, and I'm sure you guys...
For us, it's the best. For me, it's the best listener. Whoever's been paying attention, it's usually the quietest person on the boat. Yeah.
Or girl.
I was going to say, I'll put my money on any girl because they know they're not overpowering it. They know they're not pulling on it, but they're listening because they have no clue. They're not in any element. They're not in a nail salon. They're not in, you know, anything they could possibly have a real say. And they're like, okay. And then they go very smooth.
Yeah.
It's like a very.
And they can't reel against the drag. Like you get the big muscly dude. Oh, they wear himself out like 3.5 minutes fighting a giant because they just reel against lactic 40 pounds. And they're done. And the girl can't get above that.
Yeah.
They only reel when they can reel.
And that goes to the theory I was saying, like, you pull, they pull.
Yeah.
Usually those fish don't, like, go crazy. They're just, like, kind of just move around. They lay there. Obviously, it gets interesting always at the back of the boat because it's that last 25 to 30 feet where the fish is just dogging. And sometimes they can't pull hard enough to, you know, break them. I'm sure you guys, you know, every once in a while walk over, kind of hold the line.
Yeah, we hold the spool.
Just to like slow.
Palm it a little
bit. Yeah, use the rod a little bit differently just to change that little bit.
One thing to do too is like when they're starting a pinwheel, we kind of push them in the inside of the pinwheel in the corner of the boat. And it just literally shortens the pinwheel, compresses it to the point where they're like, done.
Right. Yeah.
You know? Do the vertical.
Yeah.
They pop.
I mean, we can't push too much because you'll break the rod, but just enough, you just start to really put side pressure on them.
Very similar that we found is like, I don't really touch the drag. And he's like, you want me to go up? And I go, no, don't go up. But pushing the lever one little notch
at the end
breaks the fish. Like if it's set at 30 pounds and you go to 32 all of a sudden, especially when they're dogging like that, it just crushes them. I don't know what, you know, that little bit where the rod pulse changes, where they do a pinwheel and they're
hard pulse.
And then just all of a sudden, if they're pulling out 4 feet and the boat's going up and down, then they only pull a foot and a half.
Yeah.
It changes that whole, and then you could get two or three turns and then they kind of flop over and then they change directions. It shocks them.
Yeah.
A lot.
You try to time it. Obviously going away
when they're coming up.
Yep. Yeah.
So when I said, all right, go, and I'll say, hold the spool. And you actually, they come cleaning up to the top, big eyes and stuff like that. They're not big enough that you want to put like a giant, you put it in reverse and you could, if you're fast, you could get them, but like they're so fast, you know, cause that's a lot smaller fish.
Yeah.
They could turn and turn at you really, really quick. So we don't generally, I wait till he comes around.
You don't roar back on them.
No.
Yeah.
I do in the beginning, but once it gets to like the swivels coming in and out of the tip, then you just let them kind of just plane out. And then once the leader's on the rod, once the leader's on and he's going to come up and he's going slow, hold it. And I'll give it like one bump in reverse and we'll be able to, you know, we gaff everything. I teach all the guys, gaff underneath.
We don't
go over the top. No one goes over the top, especially trolling. You know, it's a big no-no. You know, if you're going ahead, unless the boat is going ahead and you're ready to go, you're going to go for a ride.
Yeah.
And I've gotten ripped over.
Oh, because they can keep their
momentum.
They can stay upright.
Yeah. I've had, you know, Phil Delaney, who I got to work for on the Canyon Runner, like, he taught me a lot about watching that. And I got literally, 21-year-old kid, I got launched off the back of the boat. Launched. Because
I've had a few big fish.
Yeah, I tried to one hand a 90-pound yellowfin at night. He was coming in a circle. I'm like, Paul, come here. And I just go over the top, and I remember I held it, and next thing you know, I was off the back, gone, back of the boat. I was like, oh my God, I'm in water. Get him up. You know. And Phil just there was like, he just was like yelling, not at me, but he's yelling at the charter, keep reeling. You know, don't worry about Mark. You know, like. And I remember we were anchored up, and I was like, oh, my God, this is embarrassing. And the fish is swimming around. It's got the gaff in its head. And from that moment, and I'll never do it again. But when you gaff on the underside, like under the throat,
flips them.
And when it flips them, their reaction is to kick, because that's any fish's reaction. So he actually kicks toward you if you can direct them. So it's very easy. You go under, and it like kind of pulls it right.
Pins him right there.
Right to the side of the boat. And then you have that short opportunity. Okay, get another gaff over the top, in the head, done. Yeah. You know. And then that way, the guy who comes in the second gaff can lay it over the other gaff and crisscross it, and the hook's going to slide somewhere in the throat, head, not anywhere in the meat.
Yep. Right in the dorsal. Some of these deep, these YouTube special gaff shots.
Oh.
I'm not going to lie. I go over the top pretty much on every small tuna, but no, what, these guys well, that are reaching.
Well, meaning, oh. you know, small tuna, anything under 60 pound, no problem.
Yeah. yeah
any of your body weight.
We're harpooning, yeah. you know.
But I'm saying anything of over size, 73. You know, yeah. real size. You right. know what I mean? You don't want to.
Even yeah, I guess even, we're not gaffing 200 pounders much.
No. If you had to gaff, like, oh, I think it's me, short, you know what I mean? Like, okay, big racer coming in. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
But you got to be careful. You know, you got to obviously break some stuff. You're going to get ripped. You know, obviously, yeah. ripped over. You're going to break a gaff eventually because you think you're overpowering him and it's going to get ahead of steam and, you know.
Looking strong.
They are strong fish, dude.
A bluefin's real strong.
Yeah. We had at least two gaffs go in the water. We got them all back. I didn't lose any gaffs this year. Actually, did we lose a gaff? Year.
We lost two gaffs and a harpoon last year.
We only lost a gaff.
I had a gaff go into the water shark. With a fish in December after harpooning it and then gaffing in the head.
Gaff in the head and he flips and like somehow just wet.
I thought he was like 75 inches and ended up being 93. So...
Small head one?
Yeah, I was a weird one. We were catching all fish over 100 inches, and then it was like December, and they were like 80 to 90. You know, so this thing came up. I almost didn't even stick it.
I'm like, oh, this is short. Yeah. yeah. That's what I said, too, with the one in Block Island. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's a short, you know, and I'm like looking at it, and Mike was like, it's huge. What are you talking about? It's well over a keeper. You
know? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a nice one.
Yeah, we had a few of those this year. We had like a 3-week period where everything was 105 inches. And then we got into like some like 60-inch fish. Like the thing's like 40 inches. That thing is tiny.
Yeah, you
which
bring
is
them
good
in.
Though because it keeps your gets some meat for your clients. You know, on the, if you guys could do that every day where there was a I spot would to catch
rather do that.
Small ones or like, okay, we'll go catch a big one.
Yeah.
And then on the way home. You know, we're on a closed day where you can go catch and release one. They see the whole scene. Or, you know, it's 1:30 and you sat there all day and you mark it. You know, some days it just don't bite.
Yeah.
Go do something different. You can go grab something to keep them entertained.
Yeah. I wish the small fish lived closer to the land, but it seems like everything just gets bigger by us.
I know.
Towards land. You know, like we're on
Rhode Island. Rhode Island now. Everything is size.
Extra
Pronto size. You know? Yeah. We got a bluefish of 15 pounds for bait.
Yeah. I was going to say our ratio of shorts this past year was 10 giants to every 2 shorts.
Yeah. We had Peaked Hill, which had like a pretty consistent troll bite all year. You get one fish every morning trolling.
Yeah.
And then you might as well just go bass fishing because that was the only bite you're going to get.
Oh, mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
They come in from the deep water. They'd hit the edge with
for
the whales
45 minutes
for 45 minutes to maybe 2 hours.
Yep. What size were they?
48 to 60-inch fish.
Okay, so they're overs.
Yeah. You get one, and then it was like, all right.
Bass fish the rest of the day.
We had a couple of days, we had multiples, but almost every day was like, you put your spread out, you were on false light, done. That was it.
Yep.
I do love fishing down there. I fished down there with Brett quite a few times.
Yeah.
I do miss that. There's so many spots, and like going back to like, this is the spot. There's so many spots.
Oh,
there's,
my God.
I mean, you look at what we're catching now. There's fish from my inlet in Shinnecock Inlet. Montauk, right outside the Butterfish Hole. They're there all summer. Block Island, Rhode Island. God knows there's 90 miles of open bottom, no man's. There's billions of fish there that just no one run into. And then you get to the south side and there's fish all over there. You know,
yeah.
It's just where you have boats, obviously you're going to have fish. But
there's so many more fish, though.
Oh, yeah.
In other places and no one's fishing.
Yeah.
And you guys have obviously seen that from when you guys first started. You know, you guys lived on trolling.
Yeah.
That's it. Building spare bars, catching shorts. And, you know, if you caught a keeper, it was a big deal. I'm like, well, that's what Brett said. Like that 2010, there was no fish. No. You know, there was no fish
anywhere. You get a 74 incher in 2010, you're like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, we got one. You know what I mean? This is it. You know, this is, but now it's, 110? All right, whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
tell us about the dragger bite.
Dragger fishing.
Tell us what you're willing to tell us, honey.
The good thing about dragger fishing is some of my best friends are on draggers.
Yeah.
So, A, Shark and I, when my buddy Danny comes in, he just nonstop, how much bait you want, you know, and it's like pretty funny. We just pull up, he'll pull the whole pocket right into the boat if I tell him to, you know, because he knows he's the first guy when we get to the dock, gets a loin of tuna.
Yeah.
That's like, you would think a dragger could go eat anything they want. All he wants is a piece of tuna. So dragger fishing happens in September, October when the lala goes, which is a white squid that steps off the beach. And usually it happens when the water starts moving to the west and the fish find the draggers that have all the bait. And when they haul back, it's just like a feeding frenzy.
Shovel bait over the side.
Is there anything mixed with the bluefin or is it all bluefin there?
It's
bluefin, yellowfin.
Yeah, a lot of yellowfin.
Yeah, a lot of yellowfins, good size, but they're mixed in.
Yeah. All of a sudden, like, you just look down because you pull up to the dragger. When they're towing, you start shoveling bait, and there could be 30-pound yellowfins. It could be 200-pound bluefins. Could be, brown sharks everywhere. Like, if you fell in the water, you'd be destroyed. In about 6 seconds, you'd be gone.
Yeah.
Just a skeleton.
Yeah. The amount of sharks is gone.
Everything's mixed in there.
Yeah. There's all kinds of giants. There's blue marlins there in the fall because the water's warm. Mm-hmm. So it's the eddy water that comes in from offshore, and when it starts moving back out, it's just like a Venn diagram. It's three circles, you know. I know.
Well, I think just is math falling.
Yeah, but it is right. It Venn is diagram.
Mark's got a whiteboard.
Comparing and contrasting.
Yeah. Everyone thinks this dragger fishing is new. This has been going on since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
You know, giant fishing boat hauls back 100,000 pounds of fish. What else do you think is behind the boat?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's just different now. It's just we have way more yellowfins in shore because of it. So now they keep the yellowfins corralled. It keeps them all there. So as long as we have good weather, this year the weather was terrible in the fall. And when we have terrible weather, the fish just keep moving out because the draggers can't stay on them long enough. But knowing when to go to the draggers, everyone's just like going to be going to the draggers, even like the giant fishing. There'll be people on every dragger in June.
Yeah.
You know, poor guy. You know, there'll be an accident. Definitely someone.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely someone crashed in the fog.
Oh, shit.
You know, and then they don't know how to approach them. And, you know, 90% of the people don't even have Channel 16 on.
Yeah.
You know, the dragger's like, stay away, you know.
How you doing?
Yeah, the net's hauling back and you see the float line and he's in front of the net. Like, the net's coming to the boat, and he's in front. He's like, I'm hooked up here, you know. I'm watching people, like, what are you doing? You're putting everyone at harms because they just have no clue. No. What's going on? That the net's 600 feet away from the boat. There's giant doors. There's cables, you know. But very, very good fishing. You basically back up to the back of the boat after they haul back, and this might as well be supermarket sweep.
Is the whole landing the first one hooked behind the draggers just as vital as
when? The most important.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
The most important. 100%.
One. Yeah.
You know, you dump just a lot of
just
bait.
Just like Hawaii, they're talking about.
Yeah.
And just
you
like
lose them, that's it.
That's
go
it.
To the next boat.
Yeah.
You break one off. Can you get them going? Yes. But the key is like when we dump the bait, you have four rods with bait on them and you're firing out all at the same time. And have four other rods with leaders on them.
Ready to go.
Ready to go. So,
are you going with a variety of leaders at first, or are you going gorilla gear right off the rip?
Like 80 pound right off the bat.
Yeah.
Because if you can get them going, you know, just like a long liner. Like long liners can't be wrong. They use 300. Don't say the fish are leader shy.
Yeah.
Stop. Right. I mean, Brett's a perfect example. Brett fishes gorilla gear.
Yeah. His leader's this long.
Trust me. This long. He
sent me a video.
He's not parting. I hope you listen. I know you cut back more because I know how much you're buying. You know what I mean? Okay. The math, I can do good math. You know, I'm very good at math. So I know you're down to 6 feet and nubs at times.
He sent me a picture of reeling in like a 110 and the swivel's like at its peck fin.
Yeah. Okay. And he catches them.
Oh, yeah.
That goes to show you what works for him, works for him. What works for you, works for you. That's what everyone has a hook that they use, right? This is the hook, you know, but no, that's what you're confident in using and that's what works.
Right.
You know, we have like the way we have our rod set up, belt set up. It's what you use day in and day out. That's what works for you, works for you.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't work for me, you know. And you like, oh, you got to use this hook. Might as well just say, we're going to pull every one.
Yeah.
You know, I might as well throw every one of those in the garbage.
Yes.
I'm not using it. Or you have bad luck using it for the first time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know. So it's pretty pretty important. But we had you know, some good chunk fishing down by us, like not in the draggers. We got to take out a tennis player for my boss's son-in-law.
I watched that on Netflix. Was it that Netflix thing?
Match Point?
Yeah.
How have I not seen this?
It's like a tennis like reality documentary. Well, no, they're at a match. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they're at a match
He's at the U.S. Open.
He's at a match.
That's a big deal. Might as well be the Super Bowl. So, Chris, who's Mike's son-in-law, tells us, "Oh, Tommy wants to come fishing," and this is the window he has. He has a Sunday, you know, from 5 a.m. to noon. Can we catch him something? What's the biggest thing that we can catch him? And I'm like, dear God. And he goes, well, he has to play in the U.S. Open because he's number, I think at that point he was like 11 or 12 in the world. Wow. Yeah. So it is impressive.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's insane. And he's an unbelievable athlete. So I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'll take anyone fishing. All good. And then it like the reality of, we have 7 hours, and then Netflix is coming on the, you know, coming on the boat, and they're filming, and I'm like, okay, you know, this is now. Like,
how many times did his hands go up like, that trip?
Come on, Shark.
No, he had him in his pockets.
No, he was good.
So, you know, the reality of him coming, he's like, all right, he's leaving practice. He's got a night off. Then he'll meet you at the boat. I'm like, all right, so. I told Shark 3 o'clock and we had to do a bunch of stuff the day before because it's hot out. It's August, what was it, 15th or something like that?
Mid-August, yeah.
So we don't take ice or anything till that night because it's just going to melt and get everything going. I remember Shark walking down the dock and I had the motors running. The ice is loaded. Every rod is triple rigged. And he just looks at me. He goes, did you even sleep? I'm like, no, I woke up around 12. You know, I've been here the whole time. And I'm like, I got his routine. Put his bag on, generator's going, shore power. He goes, everything's done? I'm like, yeah, everything's done. You know, and I'm like, so now I'm
just getting serious, like real quick.
And I'm like, now I'm like sweating because, you know, you don't want, now you got cameras and obviously my boss, it's probably, you know, it's a very important, a lot of pressure. And I'm like, great. You know what I mean? Like, how is this bluefin on a slick, calm day?
Sunday.
Great day. Yeah. You know?
For those listening, don't book a Sunday.
Kidding. Or Saturday. Yeah. Yep. We can go bass fishing on Saturday. Yeah. That's even better.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, where are we going to go? What are we going to do? You know? And I'm like, I wanted to go to the canyon because I know we could put like, a couple of elephants on real quick, maybe a white marlin just inside, but it's just wasting a lot of time running. So I'm like, oh, I don't want to run. So I'm like, we're going to go chunking inshore, like something that we don't ever do. I'm like, dear God, like, I hope this works. You know what I mean? Like, I really.
Me too. I was
just... Yeah. Shark doesn't question what I know. He's like, we're going to go where? on a Sunday? And I remember I come out the inlet, I'm going down the beach, and he goes, where are we going? And I'm like,
I don't know yet.
And I'm like, literally white knuckled. They got, you know, Chris, we got the trainer, we got his buddy, Mike. And I just, the express boat, it's kind of tough. I don't like having to escape. Everyone is right behind me. And I'm like, I'll tell you, I'm fucking really nervous. You know what I mean? I'm like, because I want to catch the guy. He doesn't get any time off. He's a good guy. He's one of us. Like, he could sit right here and talk fishing. Not, you wouldn't even know he's a tennis guy.
Yeah.
Most normal, down to earth person. And I'm like, you know, I'm sweating and I'm like, everyone's staring. I'm like, I hope this fucking works. You know what I mean? Like, I hope this is not just an absolute fucking, you know. And of course, I brought clams to go sea bassing to fuck.
Back up to the back.
We were ready to go.
I didn't have sea worms.
Like, what can we get a bite on? And I'm like,
maybe we'll take a Montauk
and just like bail. But then I'm like, no, that's a fucking waste of fucking his time. Like, he wants to do battle. Yeah. You know what I mean? So we stopped the boat and we knew there was a lot of squid there. So I remember Shark takes us. I'm like, all right, get the squid rods. It's just barely even sun up. All right, Shark drops to the bottom. 2 seconds, boom, fucking like 14-inch lalago. I'm like, yes.
That's awesome.
That's the okay. There's a good start. At least there's bait. Shark drops again, takes one lift, fucking cleaned, you know, the whole sabiki.
God.
Oh. What are you eating, my tuna?
Yeah. I'm like, trying to keep my composure.
Yeah. Bring him, mate. Get him, mate.
So
he's like, Shark, what the fuck?
Yeah, Get it on the rod. You gotta get beat, you know. So then I look at the screen because we have a cockpit machine, and I'm like, oh my god. Oh my god. I was like, there's like three of them, and I know they're bouncing off the bottom. And I'm like, I just watched the one just cleaned house, you know, tee off on Shark Sabiki. And my boss is like, get a rod in the water. I'm like, no, hold on one second. And I just happened to like, let me just take two swings with a jig. And of course, like I dropped the jig on a 16. Like I came up once, and then, you know, that second when you're diamond jigging where I don't feel the jig anymore. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, oh, you know, like I hope this is, and I'm like, it didn't look like a big mark. So we swing. And as soon as I swing, it came tight. I'm like, oh, it's not that big. You know, I'm like, oh, here you go, Tommy. And then the thing, of course, wakes up and just incinerates a 16 VSX. And the rod, we don't have a harness because it's like a jigging rod. So we only have like 70. So now Tommy's fighting the fish. And I'm like, oh, God. And he's just like kind of in this weird position. Now I'm like, holy shit. He breaks his arm, breaks his ankle.
No shit.
I will have murder death threats at my house that he's not playing in the U.S. Open in 2 days. So now I'm like, no, don't pull that arm. Don't pull that arm. You know, like, don't do it. And he's like sweating. Things, you know, a nice fish. So he had to like take his sweatshirt off. Shark takes the rod. And I remember Shark starts pulling out, and he just looks at me. He's like, oh, it's a real one. I'm like, God. You know what I mean? Oh, no. You know? And, give it back to Tommy. Tommy gets settled. We get that, hookie or whatever that foam thing at the end. We start fighting. Start fighting it again. And like, I see it go by, and I'm sure you guys have had it happen. Like, it's in that green water.
You look at the boat.
You just saw the glow, and you're like, oh no. I'm like, and he's just doing the wobble, and I'm like, I'm like, oh God, oh no, oh no. And like, it does some weird circle, and he just kind of like rolls over, and we got two gaffs in him, and it was literally like one of those, not 72 and three quarters, it was like a 72.
Yeah.
So it worked out because it was a closed day. It was closed at that time. So
it was
perfect.
It was perfect.
First 3 minutes. I basically stop hyperventilating and gasping for air, like ready to throw up because I want to catch it.
Oh, yeah.
And I know it has no leader on it because I just tied a jig on it. So the jig is like the little knot is like this little nub sticking out. I'm like, wow, we got lucky. I'm like, you don't say. You know what I mean? We get him, got the fish, run back up on another drift. Shark makes bait. And then every live squid we put down, you know.
That's sick.
80-incher. 85-incher, you know, and it was a fun day.
Had he ever caught tunas before?
He's caught a couple.
Nothing that big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But after catching the jig, he's like, how about we use one of the big rods? I'm like, thank you. That's a great idea. I was like, hell yeah. Like,
that's awesome.
We caught a couple yellowfins, nice yellow. We're only 7 miles off the beach, you know, so in the middle of August. And now it's like 8 a.m. We already caught, I think we caught that one. We caught two like big shorts. And then we caught two keepers back to back.
That's a sad.
Yeah.
For a half day.
That's a sad.
Not even half day. No, this is a Sunday by 9 a.m.
That's sick.
There's a guy a quarter mile away from me staring at us. And he's watching because I looked at my binoculars and he's looking at me. And he goes, why? You got on the radio. You just catch another one? I'm like, yeah, we just caught our sixth one. He's like, we haven't even got a bite. I'm like, okay. You know, and I didn't want to, you know, obviously it's one of our tricks on how we were catching them and inshore fishing like you guys have. So I'm like, all right. And then we caught an 85-incher. And of course, you know, I'm sure you guys, what do you mean we got to let it go?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and yeah, I was like,
that plenty of times.
You know, and then we got to explain the whole rules and politics of blue fins and, you know, and it's tough for someone who's never the biggest fish of his life.
It is.
And I'm like, psh, let it go. And everyone's like, oh. So
we try to give the like our passion speech at the very beginning of the day, just discussing. Right. I don't care if we kill them. I don't care if we let them go. Be like, what you guys are doing today is something that no one gets to experience.
Right. Yeah. Way harder to let them go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and we also had the sampling study going with Chris. So we had a little
tail
bit of
cuts.
Yeah.
The tail thing.
The finlet clips and all that. So they got to be involved, you know, and it's cool on the small boat releasing them too, because it's right there, you know, like they're touching the thing. It's
well, tail clips are a lot easier. I was thinking about that, like, oh, let me just reach over and get a tail clip, you know, but stay there, little fellow. You know what I mean? Like, waiting to get your head rearranged, like celebrity death matches. The thing, oh, like,
dude,
you know, and you're going for a clipping or something like
that.
It's hard. It's super hard. A picture I'm going to show.
We're using the net, right?
Yeah, I was taking the manly cutters, holding the net underneath.
Yeah, because let me keep clipping. You know what I mean? Giving it a haircut.
Well, speaking of getting hurt during a process like that, I have a picture that will be in the presentation at Castafari. I have a fucking Winthrop guide imprinted on my forehead from doing that, because the rod, like, with all the pressure and trying to get the release hook on, and he freaked out and the rod spun 100, like 180 is like... from fully loaded forward to fully loaded aft, and I'm reaching over with the release hook, and it catches me right. You can see the WT
on the side of my forehead. Fred would love that. Oh, yeah, that's good. Here you go, buddy. But after we got done blue fitting, and I'm like, okay, we're good. We got our fish. We had to, like, arrange because we had cameras, and, like, now we have to do this whole thing at the dock, weighing in. Nope, we're going sea bassing. You know, so then I steam back in shore, and then we wreck sea bass for like an hour.
That's awesome. We crushed the sea bass. It was awesome.
I'm like, oh, I think this one should have them, you know, like a couple small cod, and like they had a great time, you know. And I'm like, holy shit, this actually worked out. And I'm like, it's 11 o'clock.
All before noon.
And the fact that it worked out, but I was.
You feel lucky.
Yeah. I was literally it was beyond lucky. Like that, it worked out. He didn't get hurt. So, like, that was obviously my biggest fear, that, like, he gets ripped over the side, breaks his arm.
In the hand.
Something that he cannot play in the U.S. Open, the guy just worked his whole life for, just for to go catch
you
a
see stupid, Mark out stupid there with tuna. A sweatband on.
You're taking my place, buddy. Yeah, some psycho death threat, you know, person, but explain, he hurt his wrist. Like, he's fighting the fish, and, you know, I'm, like, watching him, because I'm, like, the reel's hitting the side of him. I go, please don't. You know, like, I could just see this is where good times go bad, you know.
That's awesome, though. Was he stoked?
Oh, everybody was stoked.
Everyone was stoked.
We were stoked, everybody.
Yeah, I was stoked. It's just one of those things that, thank God, like,
I'm
not a religious person. Obviously, you go to church, and, but I was praying the night before. I'm like, please, I will give up all big eyes the rest of this whole year. Please let this guy catch a fish.
There's some that are just so much sweeter than others.
Yeah. And I'm sure you guys have taken, you know, the nicest people on the boat have the worst luck.
Totally.
The worst luck.
And the people that don't take it, you know.
Seriously.
They're just blessed with, 10 big eyes today. Oh, have we caught 50 elephants?
We didn't get 11?
Yeah. Oh, we didn't catch any Maui. We have to let it go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, we got to let that one go. Sir, your West Marine cooler does not have enough room for all this meat.
Another one's too big. It's like you just released your third 700-pounder.
When we get that...
And you're going to sleep in your own bed tonight. People travel. That's, you know, I tell people, we have some of the best fishing. Like, after spending a lot of time in Florida, we have unbelievable fishing, which is that of disadvantage a little bit, because you got to run far. You got to be very multiverse. But the fact that you could go leave your marina, go catch a giant tuna, keep heading south, go to the water, catch a blue marlin, white marlin, wahoo, big eye yellowfin, swordfish, mahi, all in the same day. If you really got that luck,
and that's a lifetime worth of fishing for most people.
It's an achievement of things.
Yeah,
you know, people travel all over the world, just like people that go to Canada with you guys.
Yeah, no, you're good.
It's okay.
People that go to Canada, see, raising my hand,
getting flustered.
You know, they go all over, just like they go catch marlin, whatever they want. But at any given moment, you could have that happen
totally
right here. It's just very hard because we have tough weather, tough conditions,
short season,
and you got to be ready for anything.
Yep. So, it's awesome.
What other questions? I know you guys got some questions.
One thing that Taylor and I were talking about before we got here, because I don't think we've asked you this question before. Or both of you guys, but who do you aspire to be now? I mean, like, you have clearly established, both of you guys, your whole team have established a reputation. You're extremely consistent, extremely prepared. There's a lot of people that look up to you.
Yep.
Who do you look up to?
Can you go first?
You guys can think about it.
Putting Shark on Panama spot right now.
I'll tell you, like, I look up to Mark.
Yeah.
You know, like, straight up. Like,
Jesus, I might make Mark tear up.
You know, like, I learned how to fish from him.
Yeah.
How long have you guys fished together?
12 years, probably.
Wow. That's awesome. And you're still fucking with him.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You know?
Long time. There's a lot of times he fucking hates me. I can be. I'll tell anyone. You know, I'm a great guy. I hang out with, outgoing. But when it's time to go to work, it's time to go to work. You
totally.
Know what I mean? That's it. You know, that's the way.
There's times. I mean, we're family. And there's times where the three of us want to murder.
Yeah, like Homer Simpson and Bart. Like,
I'm holding the harpoon about the stick of fish. I'm like,
but you know, Mark pushes me to be the best. Yeah. And expects the best. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like.
But that's what you want.
It's part of being a team. You know what I mean? Like, you got to push each other to be better. You know, as I push him to be better, you know, because I know he can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a really good point.
I wouldn't say I look up to one individual person. There's a lot of people that, I mean, like I said, I've had very good teachers. I mean, and you only learn from your teachers, you know, guys like Brett. You know, Brett's a good friend, but Brett's been doing it, you know, a few more years older. Guy like Pete Speeches, Cookie Murray. There's professionalism. You know, there's people that I've learned a little bit from all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't inspire. Obviously, I wouldn't be my own person.
Yeah.
But I've gained so much knowledge about so many different things. Phil Delaney, my old captain on the Canyon Runner, even Mike Zajac, you know. Mike, you know, we all learn from each other. I wouldn't say I aspire to be one, you know, but if I could take a little bit and be better from each of them. But all those guys that I mentioned – all are in, you know, like core group that I look up to either as like a pseudo older brother, father figure, professionalism guy, Danny Scotty runs a Dina Lisa, Bob Matthews runs the low bid. These are very professional guys that have had the same private boat jobs. They're been at the top of their game. You know, they've worked for the same families for some of them 30, 40 years.
Yep.
And just being professional in the way you do it, obviously, when you come on the boat, I'm a little bit different. And I try to have fun and have a good time because when we try to overthink everything and I start getting, I spin myself out, doesn't really
work. You're professional, but you can't be too serious.
Exactly. And when I get like overly serious, it's not good.
Yeah.
I just put so much pressure on me, everyone else. It puts bad juju on the whole boat, bad vibes, and nothing works out. You know, you start losing stuff.
People start to hesitate.
Yeah. You know, like I said, we... You watch a video of us fighting fish. It's pretty much very, very boring.
So boring.
Yeah. It's like, unless there's some music, you're like, okay. You know, there's no even talking. Like, not lift, run.
You guys practice a lot, though. That's huge.
It's the same situation over and over and over. And I'm not a Kansas City fan, per se, but it's like what happened this year in the Super Bowl. It's 4th-and-2. Mahomes gets the ball. He knows. He's going for the first down.
Yeah.
He's taking it under control. And like you be in the same situation. And that's something I got to do because I've been fishing my whole entire life. I've been in a lot of bad situations, you know, either safety wise or whatever that we talked about before, or we got to get a bite in a tournament. We need to catch a couple more for points, whatever it is, but making a power move or making a move in the middle of the night, you know, like, I don't know if this is going to work. And we're like, really doing this? I'm like, yep, this is what we're doing. You know, and Shark always knows. He goes, do what you do and whatever
trust,
you
and trust. Trust yourself.
Yeah.
Trust.
Yeah. Dude. We don't think. And that's why it's like, he trusts me. I trust him. All right, go. If he wants to put more drag on the fish, let him. He knows how the rod pulls more than anyone.
Yeah.
You know, it's all, you know, he knows he's got the right harness. The reel's perfect. The line's perfect. You know, the parabolic bend, the guys, you know, nothing's going to break. So we already know how that's going to end. And go ahead. You want to pull? Go ahead and fire away. You know, and I know he's not going to overly pull. He's not going to get anxious and try to catch a thing too quick or, you know, there's all timing with everything. And that's something that, definition of insanity is something over and over again, expecting a different result.
Yeah,
you know?
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, it's giant tuna fishing over and over again. You know, staring at a balloon, watching the balloons bob around in the whole ocean.
Yeah.
Sometimes I look back at, like, what we've done day by day by day, and I think we're literally insane.
Mm-hmm.
How many hours of the day you're just sitting there,
just staring?
This episode is brought to you by Rodan Marine Systems. Technology in the marine industry seems to be improving at an exponential rate from year to year, and Rodan Marine is at the forefront of the GPS anchor and trolling motor industry. We've been running a Rodan GPS anchor on our 30-foot center console for a few seasons now, and it's been a game changer. With quick deployment and the simple push of a button, you can anchor down on a spot and stay within a few feet of your target location without having to deal with a traditional anchor, 20-plus feet of heavy chain, 400 feet of anchor line, obviously depending on how your setup is, but it's just very, very convenient and accurate. The fishing applications for using a Rodan are really endless. We find it extremely useful for both our inshore striped bass fishing as well as our offshore tuna fishing, and the customer service and support at Rodan is amazing. They offer overnight shipping on parts and are available to troubleshoot any issues that you might have. We've put close to 1,000 hours on our motor and have had next to no issues. Any problems or questions that we've had, the team at Rodan responded quickly and has had parts to us the next day. If you're interested in taking the next step on improving your boat's anchoring system and giving yourself an advantage when it comes to fishing, make sure you check out Rodan Marine Systems' line of GPS anchors. Visit rodanmarine.com to check them out.
Same thing. You get up, we all look at our Instagram stories. Here goes the cup of coffee. If I did mine every day, you see me like wearing my teak out, racing back and forth, rigging, and I'm retying all the knots. And I'm like, all right.
That you just tied.
didn't like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's an OCD thing mixed in with being professional, mixed in with I only stand for the best.
It's a de-stressor too. If you fix it in that moment, then you're not fucking white knuckling it when you have one on.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that I get questioned about my boss, about my punctuality and why we're doing this and you're nuts and doing that, but that's all part of it.
For sure.
And that's how you have a good track record and you consistently catch them over and over and over again. And that's how you do better, obviously, in tournaments. Everyone's going to get lucky. There's always a bigger one. But as long as you get a bite during it, and there's so many good fishermen now. They
really are.
I mean, it's the caliber of people, boats, teams. And it's a team sport. I don't care. That's one thing I learned in Florida. Sail fishing, it might not be this big game, backing down and big fish and wiring and anything like that. But you watch the guy sail fishing. It's a team of 8 guys, kite guys, rods coming in and out, and it's a pit crew. Mm-hmm. It's like a NASCAR thing. How fast can you go, not make a mistake, and catch the most amount of stuff in the shortest amount of period? It's not a giant tuna where they're pulling on it, and you're fighting in the chair.
It's finessed attention to detail.
Yeah. It's all little things, right? Yeah. You guys just making leaders, making sure everything's perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys make leaders this time of year like we all do. And you have everything kind of in some bins. It's like a starting thing. But when you do it in your own house under a nice condition, you're relaxed. Every crimp is perfect. Every piece of chafe gear is right. Every hook is right. The leaders, it's not like. And then there's sometimes where you just don't care.
Yeah.
And it works out.
Yep.
I'm not promoting that, but I see a lot of people kind of fumble through things. Like there's me prepping out 2 years in advance. And then someone who just clips on a lure. Yeah.
Snap swivel is a live bait.
Snap swivel to the hook.
Swivel to the 230 Spro.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are good ones.
Yeah.
But no, Spro, no problem. Gets lodged in the tip and the fish still lays there upside down.
Yep.
The best is when I used to take, and you probably do this, you probably still do this. You get in 20, 30 used bars from somebody that you need to rebuild.
Oh, yeah.
And the gems that you see.
Oh my god!
The hooks with another hook and a snap swivel in between them, or
snap swivel,
or the plastic still over the hook.
It's melted on. That was a real good one. We had the hook on, and then the ballyhoo chunk still on the hooks.
Oh yeah,
that was
granny knot in the 400 mono.
Or you'd see the knot.
Yeah.
You'd see the knot in the squid somewhere. Yeah. Right. And you go to cut it off, and you're like,
what's going on?
Yeah, he goes, like, yeah, we caught probably 20 fish on that. Meanwhile, you and I would be imploded before it comes out of the pit.
Oh, exactly.
Now he's like, nah, the hook is beyond dull.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, like, what are you talking about? I know. It's rust.
Squids are all flat.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. And they're all in this, like, you take the bar out and 30 bars come out together. You pretty much just drop it back down. You're like, nope.
And every squid's bent like this.
Yeah.
Oh, you gotta like clean them with pledge and like,
yeah.
And it's three times as much work. I said, might as well just buy new shit because it costs way more money to re-rig stuff and time and
confidence too.
Yeah, redo it. I mean, that's what we do in the fall. Like I tell everyone we don't do it actually in the winter. We actually do it when we're still fishing in that mindset. Obviously the boat travels and we're fishing all the time, but when we're done tuna fishing, we make leaders. You're like, when we're done in October, we're like, all right, we got to redo all these bars, and we know it's fresh in our head. We got to change this, and I got to drop the birds back, and I got to, that way, everything is perfect. We take everything we use every trip, it goes in a separate bin, does not go back in with the new stuff.
We're a little bit more day to day just because we don't have to have the variety of rigs.
Yeah, we get like guys one to three bites.
And plus we're so it's so condition dependent on the type of fishing that we're doing. It's like, we don't know if we're fishing 130 or 200 for the day, So it also just keeps our tackle a little tidier, I feel.
Are there certain leaders you don't get a bite on? Do you have like a juju about, we put this leader out. It's been out for six days.
I will not put a floater leader out that isn't at least 3 fathoms. That's one thing that I'm adamant about. Like, it could be 2 inches short on my third pole.
Not for me.
I don't know.
I'd say leader length.
And most of that's just like our distances are so precise.
Yeah, well, you know your down angle, the way your boat versus, the line shy sits versus the big boat. I'm sure it's different the way the sinker lays.
Yep.
You watch, I pay attention to the way you guys have them banded and the way you have a T10 mounted with the down rod. I'm like, okay, that's interesting why they did that, And it's probably all boats are different. But that's what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
My boat, a little bit different. I might not rock. I don't have a sea keeper, but I might not rock, or the boat's drifting at a different pace.
Yep.
So you want the angle changed a little bit, or you want the sinker a little further away.
Yeah. It's a recipe at the end of the day. I mean, you're all working towards the same meal, but you might use a couple different little ingredients depending on what your flavor is going to be at the end of the day.
All depends on the bite too. Like those days you go out, you just know, like the fishing's been incredible and the weather is perfect, and you just know that it's gonna be ferocious.
Yeah,
it's like there'll be days that going out, like we'll use that 15-foot leader.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, but when they're biting.
That's, yeah,
right.
I tell everyone that, and that's they.
You're going for the one bite though, where everything has to be exactly like it's supposed to be.
Yeah. It's got to be perfect, and it's got to be white.
Because we're wondering the whole time, the whole day.
Yeah. What if?
Right.
I do that all the time. What if I went here? What if I go there? Canyon fishing is a lot different. You're in the middle of a haystack, basically.
Yeah.
And the problem is down by us when we're fishing, I'm saying from West Atlantis going east, there's not a lot of boats. So there's no coverage. I'm not saying I'm not inviting boats, but when you go up to the west, like in the Hudson, there's a lot of coverage. So what's on the west side of the canyon versus the east side. You can't possibly cover every spot at different times of the day. And the east side might be better in the morning, but the west side's better in the afternoon. You're not going to know that because if you stop at the east side in the morning and you catch fish there, you're not making it there. You're not going wandering over 8 miles away like, oh, let me go see what's over here.
Right.
Yep.
And then you have to kind of read between the lines of who catches what. That guy caught 3, I should be able to catch 9. Or what did he see that, it's almost, what, you know, what people don't see is what I'm like, oh, did you see that? No, yeah, we saw 100 shearwaters, but we didn't get any bites, you know, like,
yeah,
that's a real
shearwater. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, really?
Where were you? You're like, really? You don't want to go there. Like, no, we do.
No, we do. And it's happened, you know, like, they were just there at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they got frustrated quick because they listened to the radio and they just, oh, they're wrecking
those
over
fish
here.
Moved on. Those shearwaters were on the aftermath.
I can tell you, the night we went 5 for 7, it was on a spot where, you know, I'm not going to say what canyon we're in, but we were on the west side all day because we were wrecking fish. There was blue fins, there was big eyes, there was loads of yellow fins. And I was just not being stubborn. I was like, I don't even need to go down there, you know. And then I find out that, you know, just by listening, a Florida guy was on the other corner, was on the southeast corner. And I'm like watching him on IAS and I'm like, I see him stopped. And I'm like, oh, maybe he's just, you know, I don't know what he's, you know, who knows what he's doing. It's just, he's never been fishing up here. I'm like, oh, maybe he's fighting a blue marlin. You know, I saw he was plug fishing. We went by him in the morning. He had 2 dredges out. I'm like, oh, maybe he's on a blue one. And then like he got on the radio to like say to some guy, yeah, we've been on these big eyes for 3 or 4 hours. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. You know? So I like immediately go wandering down there. And like, I kind of had an idea of where he was. And I remember we went sword fishing that night. We had like a couple little crappy little bites, or maybe we caught a little one or something like that. And at like 2:30, I'm like, all right, nope. Or maybe three. I'm like, let's go. Let's set in. He's like, I'm like, ready. I'm like, I know where they are. And like, I made a long pass when I was just driving. I marked them like a 350 or 400. I marked 3 fish. I'm like, night, night, you know, you're mine. Yeah. And made like another real pass where down sea tack, down current, lined it up all right. And it was just perfect. Some wasn't up yet. And phew, here they come.
Yeah.
You know, then we call in Teddy, who's literally a boat length away. This is how crazy the canyon fishing is this year. I'm like, Teddy, I'm on. He's like, all right. He's like, I'm pulling on something now, but I see he's literally maybe 300 yards that night. He comes on my port side, which is where they were calling from, hooks 9 blue fins in the dark in the canyon, 77 degrees.
Wow.
9 like buck 50 blue fins. He goes, what do you got? I'm like, I got 5 big eyes now. He's like, what? You know what I mean?
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it goes to show you that one tack or one little knot of fish was there. Then like 5 of the boats saw us both stop. No one had to bite the rest of the day. It was over. And then that spot, that's it. They were just there at that little feeding time at night, and off they go.
That's insane.
Intel is very, and reading between the intel, right?
Good intel.
Dissecting
real, the intel. Real intel.
Yeah. Like,
what's he really saying on the radio?
Yeah.
Like, well, now, can you hear the tone of somebody?
Now there's no radio, which is great.
That's true. Oh,
no, in reach. We have Starlink. Starlink.
Yeah, that's true.
So I might as well just keep it on 16 and be like, I was calling you. Oh, unless you got my cell phone number, you ain't talking to me. Yeah. You know, but the Starlink has changed
the game for changed sure.
Everything, everyone go offshore. You have full service, every chart, everything imaginable. I mean, you can't for $250. You would pay $250 every single trip. That's $250 a month to have unlimited data.
Yeah,
you know, I can FaceTime you guys as we're trolling. We can do a lot.
You could do the podcast.
Yeah,
you can do a podcast.
Got my wheels spinning a little bit.
Yeah. You can do it right from there. But the safety thing, you don't need all this sat phone in reach. You just need that. Obviously, I still have an in reach to put in our ditch bag.
Yeah.
Because I don't care if they want to charge me $10,000 a minute.
You gotta have.
You know, thing. Come get me right now.
Yeah.
You know, we are here. So it stays in the bag. We actually keep 2 of them on there, and. It's a big part. You know, that's probably the biggest game changer in sport fishing right now.
That and sonar probably.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
Sonar definitely, but in reach for the actual practical person.
Yeah.
You know, for.
It's been huge. That's been a huge tool for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's not even worth having an in reach. It's worth just putting the Starlink on because you have full communication with everything. It doesn't matter. I'm sure you guys have certain spots where you have one bar. And you're like,
our like 3 best spots are the only spots.
No that service. Have service.
But the inreach is also bad because I'm sure you guys have seen it. There's such a long delay sometimes when it sends, when someone actually is sitting there because it doesn't automatically just download instantaneously.
You'll get like 10 messages at once.
And you're like, And that was, for you guys, that's a lot, 45 minutes, because it could have been a bite right before the slack.
Right.
Now, you either got to just leave your ball there, if you guys are anchored up, and just hammer down to wherever, you know, the other boat is.
Yeah.
You know, but Starlink, we're on, like, instantaneously, like, you could tell when there's, we have a code, a couple of us, when it's just letters, you know what I mean? I just like press anything, you know, to come to that other guy,
yeah.
You know, like, get you right now.
Mark just sent me hieroglyphics. Yeah. We must go.
Yeah, you gotta leave. You gotta be
in. I don't know what it means, but it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, let's, you gotta be here right now. We all know, and we're all working together, and it helps, because then it gives us enough time. It gives us opportunity to capitalize on a bite.
Yep.
And that's how you know, obviously, I call it like the real truth serum, you know, and some people don't reciprocate. They'll tell you, and then they don't reciprocate. I'm like, all right, you know, and, you know, it's me and my buddy George on the Crisdell and one of my real good friends. I mean, we tell each other every time something breathes on a rod.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think I saw him on the right long. You know
yep.
what I mean?
Yep.
So, but we're always in tune and be like, and you put the kind of the story together and you see it progressing throughout the day. And when you look back at all the texting, it's like, oh, that's why it came together. And then you look at the water shot and windy.
This episode is also brought to you by LT Marine Products. Since 2011, LT Marine has been designing and developing innovative, unique, and high-quality American-made sport fishing equipment. Taylor and I have known the crew at LT since they started. Chris is a great guy. We've been using every single piece of equipment that he's made over the last several years. His rod holders are extremely heavy duty and high quality. He has the machining equipment to be able to put your boat name on the face plates and do other custom work as well, which is pretty cool. And recently, over the last couple of years, we've worked with him to develop some new products that have actually been very popular amongst the Northeast, Northeast fishermen, specifically offshore and tuna fishermen. So two of those products have been his swim hook for if you're harvesting a big giant tuna, you know, you want to take care of that fish as best you can prior to bringing him on board. And part of that process is after the fight, swimming the fish, you know, for a certain amount of time, kind of depending on the health of the fish and how the fight went, but usually ends up being around an hour to get all the lactic acid out of the muscles and give a better product at the end of the day when we sell our fish. So we helped him design an affordable swim hook to be able to tow the fish behind the boat at a low speed and accomplish that goal. So that was a pretty cool product that we collaborated on. And another one is the new LT Marine release hook. We've been doing a lot of release fishing for giants over the last couple of years with the way that the quota has been open and closed. So we've really had a need for a way to properly revive these fish and get them back into good health upon release. So if you go on the LT Marine website, you can see the release hook there. You can also go on our Instagram, Facebook, and see how we have it rigged. But it's a tool that we've implemented into our process aboard our boats, and it makes releasing fish a lot safer for the crew, a lot better for the fish, and it's a really high quality product. We used it all season, never had a problem, never broke it. So definitely check out that new release hook from LT. Or if you want to see any of Chris's products, visit ltmarineproducts.com. Please make sure you use the promo code CBROS for 10% off your next order.
I mean, for us too, like a lot of the comms, like an example would be, you know, being that we have the two boats, one's fast, one's not. But like, even just, you know, how's the bait look? Or I'm marking. All right. Do you have them up and down? Are they passing through? Like, and then you can kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together. Like, all right, they're not feeding here, but they're feeding here, or they're traveling to feed on this bait, and you can start putting the whole recipe together.
I mean, for you guys, it's only a couple. It's really, say, July, August, September, October. It's 4 months. It's $1,000.
Yep.
In the scheme of it, it's the same as a sat phone.
What's the hardware?
It's just a dish. Was it probably 14 by 14? And it's just powered by...
Yeah, a square dish.
Yeah, a square dish. And mounts facing forward and right to a router and plug it in the outlet. That's it. See, for the little boat, obviously, it's tough.
Yeah.
You don't have a generator or anything like that.
But fucking sure. Driving around with this radar dome on the T-top.
Yeah. Shit everywhere.
Look like the Ghostbusters vehicle.
Oh, yeah. I have welded everywhere. Yeah. You know? It's never big enough, right? I'm sure your little boat is, you know, but what boat do you guys like fishing on?
Dude, it's a toss-up for me. It's a straight toss-up. Toss-up.
For the weather.
I think I overall prefer the big boat. But I think actually fighting fish, I think you can catch more fish with the little boat.
Of course, yeah.
Especially in a crowd.
You whip their ass on the little boat. Well,
as long as, obviously, you guys have everything, double backing plates, and Chris makes an unbelievable rod holder. You know, we haven't snapped our teak yet out of the Rebel, so.
Soft.
You
know,
you get that, like, 45-degree angle, and if he's swimming away, it's like, that thing's going to get so tired so fast.
Yeah, well, even to put the rod in the bow, I'm just like, put 45 pounds, have fun.
Yep.
You know, hold me around, you know.
I mean, yeah, it tires them out quick.
The big boat, though, the big shadow on the bank, it's just, it can be a,
on the downright.
A game. Yeah. It's a game changer.
It is crazy.
Really,
like, we'll go through weeks. We might as well not even fish another rod.
Yeah. But there are days with a small boat, with the kind of sneaky, you know, lighter profile, I guess, on the water when the fish are been pressured.
Well,
sometimes you get that bite because they squeak through that little spot in the fleet, and it's like
you could also fish lighter leader on the little boat because you're not driving as much. Well, you could drive a whole lot less and put the line on the reel, and you could back off on the drag because the drag is going to be taken away by using a little boat.
Yeah,
so it might. But I'm sure when it gets windy, I'd want to be on the big boat.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. Yeah, no, I like both.
It's fun. It's nice to change it up every once in a while.
There is something about taking water over the transom versus like just bang, forward on them. But.
Yeah, it is kind of anticlimactic chasing one down on the small boat.
Because you're putting a line on the reel at a very, very fast pace.
Yeah.
And you get like all the main bulk of the line back, and then you know, all right, he's only 50 feet to the leader.
Yeah,
right.
You're like, all right, we got him. You know,
it was tough early season. We had some really nasty water early season, which is why I think the herring didn't really stick like they've stuck the last few years. It was just this, long story short, rumors and people talking. It was some type of algae we had in the water that just didn't go away.
It was almost like silky.
Yeah. And
that was in July?
Into like
July.
June, July into the very, very beginning of August, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
But
yeah,
that's good for the leaders.
Almost every fish. And what's funny is it didn't touch mung up the leaders. It's just every kill shot, the swivel was like
buried.
Two turns on the reel before you could even see it.
Yeah.
You know? And like 110s you can't
fighting fish for a long time.
Yeah.
Because you're like, you're waiting until things land.
In a situation like that in the little boat sucks.
Yeah, well, you can't see also the perception of your.
Yeah. You can't tell if you get him laid, you have him laid over on the
side. He's
got to
be right there.
Yeah, exactly.
So many of those fish we'd have up to the boat and you're like holding the harpoon. You're like, you know that if it was a normal day, he's dead.
Yeah.
You're like, I could stick him right now. It's water didn't suck.
Definitely easier to harpoon off of probably a bigger boat too.
Totally.
You know,
you get
the big boat, you're right there in the space, and I'm sure you guys have run out of space.
I mean,
the amount of crap
you and you bring. Can survive a rollover on the big boat, like even if you have them perfectly patterned and just something weird happens, like you take a heave weird or and he just rolls over, then at least you have a dart chart opportunity on the other side. The little boat, you just fucking have to make a drastic maneuver to get him back in those same pinwheels, you know. But
it's fun,
it is fun.
All right, you got what other questions we got? We got any questions from people at home? What are you?
What are some questions that we've got through the Patreon group recently that we might be able to ask here too?
I mean, people have obviously different opinions.
We had one just like simple. We kind of asked you this before, but just simple prep things to be fast in the moment? Like, are there any, like aside from make sure you have elastics and extra shit, pockets, day kit, like we've kind of talked through all that.
How many Ballyhoo do you rig?
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. I mean, we rig all that stuff the day before, basically,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, everything's prepped the day before. Like, that's on a Shark standard prep out. 4 packs of selects, a pack of mediums, and a pack of dinks.
Yeah.
Ready to go. Plus, we have our...
Rigged or just, like, prepped?
No, prepped. Prepped. Okay. Everything we could rig on the way out. You know, like, Shark or my boss will rig, you know, a couple split bills, a couple, you know, we can get everything started. But everything's prepped. But a lot of bait prepped.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be... Unless it's really good fish. I'd rather be throwing the ballyhoos away at the end of their trip than not having enough ready to go.
On all your single stuff, are you running all of that direct connect or are you running snaps on your flat line so you can swap that stuff out quicker?
Everything we fish is basically direct connected. The only thing we have snap swivel now is when we're going yellowfin fishing.
Yeah.
Because the snap swivel is, you're just adding a failure rate.
Yeah.
You know, the snap, every snap opens, especially you learn from guys in Hawaii, you know, if fish is tailing away, blue marlin, and you got a snap swivel, and say it's a real big one, he got the tail wrapped, he starts whacking his tail, open the snap swivel, see you later.
Yeah.
And they'll open the swivel. So that's why direct connection, big ball-bearing swivel when you're leadering anything like that is important.
Yeah.
Or winding the swivel. We wind everything on the rod.
So you're doing direct connect even on like your marlin hardheads and all that shit?
Everything too. Has – all of our stuff has – you know, I'll – either crimp a 300-pound ball-bearing swivel onto the rod, and then everything is open-ended.
Gotcha.
And then I'll just crimp it as we go.
Gotcha.
And I'll take the time every single time. And the same thing goes for every lure, every shoot that we tie. Everything is direct, clean presentation. You know, I've seen too many snap swivels open up.
Yeah.
And obviously no one has accountability in the tackle industry.
Yeah.
But like... everything's being made cheaper. The wire's softer. You know, you whack it, thing opens up. And I'm sure you've seen it.
Yeah, we electrical tape all our bars and we're trolling for giants.
Yeah. Because that's just, it's a failure rate. Obviously, that's different. But if we built the bars, like looking back on it now, when I build all my bars, I should have just built the bars with a ball bearing swivel instead of a loop for myself personally.
Yeah.
You know, like a heavy duty ball bearing. And that way, you know, because they're ours, you make the tag end longer. So if we got to cut it back a little bit, but obviously that takes more time. And there's our bars and versus everyone else's bars, you know, it's a lot of time.
Yeah.
People don't, and that's one thing on planet Earth, we don't have enough of, right? It's time, you know. Mm. Yeah.
Anything else you got?
Just trying to think of like topics not really covered that'd be interesting. I like the nighttime stuff.
I do like sail fishing for any of my South Florida friends that are listening.
Yeah, you're just locked up abroad.
Yeah.
Locked up abroad. You can see he's contemplating there.
You know what?
If I just leave that on it.
I call it a hostage crisis with no negotiator. It grows on you, sail fishing. It's just not my thing. I do like it when they're biting, but there's some long days that you can't. It's not like our fishing where you could kind of change it up. When it's not happening, it's just not. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
The edge isn't there. The bait's not there. You might as well go home, you know.
Have you had any bluefin encounters down there yet?
I have in the past. Been same as like Brad who's done it. I learned sail fishing from Brad and from Carullo and – it's a knife to a gunfight. You just see him. You know, I'm sure we all saw that video.
That's why I brought it up.
You don't have a chance, a fighting chance.
Yeah.
And then most of the people don't know in Florida, you're not even allowed to keep them.
Yeah.
It's closed. So there's a lot of bluefins right now in the Bahamas, you know, over in Chubb, there was a lot in the pocket. But, you know, you could fight the thing for an hour, you know, hours and not even have a, see it.
They're still eating.
Yeah, they're still just, you know, you see them
down there.
You're just tailing down. Yeah. Nothing is affecting that 1X circle. It's not, and 30-pound fluoro is not tiring them out.
Yeah.
Same goes for the elephants. You know, if you get jumped by those big 100, 150 pound yellowfins, you hear of like probably three a year get caught. And sometimes people just get lucky and then most of them break them off. You know, it's not happening. You got a lot of current. Once that fish tails you back offshore, you know, you have the Gulf Stream right there. The rod's just going to bend. He's just going to lay in the current. You're done. You know, and you can't horse him up on a 20 pound rod. You can only pull so hard and you can't do anything that's going to change. You know, it's only 20 pound test.
Yeah.
You know, it puts everything in perspective too. When we fight stuff on like 7'1" 30s
yes,
with like 200 pound jack high, you know what I mean? You're worried about breaking it off. You know, you're like, oh, maybe we catch them on 20 pound today.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it goes to show you pull, they pull. Some guys do get them. Brett got one. He said in a tournament when he was listening. So it's
possible.
It's possible, but I'm all set with that. It. Yeah, I'm good. You know,
shark can fight that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like fighting fish.
Yeah, I find like a couple things a year that I'm like, what the fuck am I doing?
You know
what I mean? I like gaffing leader.
Do you enjoy it? Or you do it because
I enjoy it. Yeah, I think it's competitive. Like, you know, you versus
what's the biggest battle you've ever had?
Probably the giant, right? Stand up.
Yeah, giant standing up in a canyon was.
I forget how long it was, but.
Long time, a couple of 5 hour battles. So we've had
5 hours. You're the only one on the rod.
Stand up, yeah.
Oh my god,
that's a long time.
We split a blue marlin, me, Jimmy, and him, like 800. That morning, we caught a blue first fish. We didn't even troll like 4 or 5 minutes, and we got a little outrider out with a medium, like a little 80 hook. That, you know, we're just trying to catch bites.
Yeah,
you know, you catch a white on it, catch whatever, catch a yellowfin. And, you know, Mama Duke's coming rolling in, you know, and I'm like, oh, it's a blue one. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, I look like a white bill to me. And then, it, like, you see it roll. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then it jumps. And we have there's a video on my Instagram of a thing just ripping jumps. And it's so big, you can't even get out of the water. And I'm like,
oh,
my God. And we fight it. We got him. I grabbed the leader. It was so big. I debated on, like, we have... you know, aspirations of killing a big one. I want to kill a big one.
It was close.
Be cool.
Yeah.
It was
anything over 9, I'll do.
Yeah.
Because you could fight the fight of why'd you kill it?
Yeah.
On the Canyon Runner, we always had it was a standing bet that if we caught a grander, if you kill it, Adam would buy us a presidential Rolex. But if you called it and you missed, you had to buy him a presidential.
Oh, Jesus.
So it's a good bet.
Sure.
Me and Zay Jack Cook one time where Mike looked up to me and I'm like, oh man, you know, like, are we going to do this? And
you're looking down.
Yeah. We had Damien Romeo, rest his soul, an unbelievable angler. And he straps in for like, you know, an 8. Damien used to bring these crazy lures, you know, before.
He bought everything.
Everything.
Any new lure you could possibly think of,
and he put this thing out. I'm like, don't even fucking put that thing out. Like, that's what they use, like, in Kona. You know what I mean? He goes, and he talked to someone. He goes, no, this is the lure. Someone sold him on it. And I just remember it was sunset on Southwest Corner, and this thing came. It was one of the biggest animals I've ever seen. It came paddling in and just, like, sucked it in and just kept swimming away. I'm like, and Mike looked at me, and I'm like, holy shit, it's our fish. This is it. And like, he's like, get the gaff. You know? I remember, I'm like, dude, we're going to be here all fucking night. And then it ended up, we got dumped because it ate a 70 and 600 yards. It got me stretched out. I was backing up and we broke it off in the belly.
Oh.
It dumped like 400 or 500 yards. Honestly, it was not even a chance for on a 70. I usually think that you have a shot. The thing, you know, when the reel goes so fast, it shuts the clicker off. And I was like, holy. And the thing's we're just staring at it in sheer amazement. And it's just ripping jumps. As fast as it's water, it was out of the water. And I'm like, wow, this is it. This is our, you know, I'm like getting every gaff I've ever owned, harpoons. We were going to go full 300 on this thing. Like, full kill, everything. And then we just ended up breaking it off. And, you know, Damien was sitting there with like a sourpuss on it. Goes, we got to get bigger reels. Next thing you know, he wants to troll all 130s on the Canyon Runner.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, we'll just keep fishing, you know. And I'm like, wow. And I remember that one in particular.
Yeah.
But Shark and Jimmy both looked at me And they're like with the 800 of like, is this gonna be the one? And I was gonna say get the, and then we broke it off. Yeah, we were gonna grease it. But I want to make sure if we catch it, I want to make sure it's a I'm not
one and done.
Yeah, I've killed a couple 600s in tournaments, killed a 700. I want to make sure I don't need to kill one. I'd rather see it swim. But you catch a super, anyone tell you Joe Byer, any of your buddies tell you, catch the super big ones and you're going to wear it out.
Totally.
And hopefully it walks back.
That one Tyler got was big.
780?
Yeah.
You caught that rip. Yeah.
Was that 9-something?
No.
Tyler and Dree.
Yeah, the state record.
Yeah.
It was like this only 7?
Right up around 800
pounds. I shouldn't say only 7-something. It's a big fish.
Tyler's caught a lot of big ones.
Yeah. You're right next to him when they hook.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Tyler's that's someone awesome. I'd like to see. Tyler's a very quiet person.
Yeah. We've talked to him a few times.
Yeah, he's great guy. Tyler's traveled the planet.
Yeah.
Andreessen is, he's got family vintage history in sport fishing. Very, very professional guy.
Yeah, extremely professional.
And he's got the opportunity and to kill big ones and stuff like that. Mm. I remember when he killed that one, I'm like, oh man, he knows there's some sea creatures.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I tell her. The World Cup's going to be 1 year, the water's going to line up where you can go fish in West Atlantis and someone's going to catch an 800 and you're going to be able to compete with Madeira and Kona. But the only downside for that World Cup tournament, it's 1 day of 24 hours. You're limiting yourself, to catch it, bring it in.
Yeah.
You know, you got 4 or 5 hours of running. So you're putting yourself at a disadvantage where you just roll out of Kona. You're like,
put the rigors down.
Okay. There's the bell buoy.
Yeah. Yeah. And they got the most opportunity, same as the Azores, the most opportunity.
Well, since you just got back from, what was it, Panama?
Panama, yeah, Boca del Toro.
Sick.
Yeah.
Where are some other places? Where's like the place you've had in your mind that you want to go?
New Zealand.
New Zealand would be sick. I've been to the Azores.
Azores is up there for me.
Azores
are so close.
Azores, obviously, they have big eyes, so we would probably be the only people on planet Earth.
Yeah,
it'd be great.
Drive away from the blue. I'm thinking about it. If they don't leave till like 6, what happens after 4 p.m.? Like, what happens there at sundown?
I know.
You imagine?
Like, what else lives there? What is the bottom fishing? Like, there must, the wahoos that must be there.
Dropping.
The big eye. Like when Joe was telling me about the big eye fishing there, I was like, stop talking. You know what I mean? Like if you knew how to troll or trolled a big squid bar there with no hooks.
Yeah.
Wow. We had bars packed. We had everything
packed. Yeah, we were 3 days
for Gomera.
Then we had everything ready to go.
Yeah.
COVID to do like false light fishing there too.
Yeah.
And then it shut it all down.
I'd like to go there.
New Zealand for that sword fishing. That's the only.
Yeah, it's pretty.
They have some.
They use hammers. Like skipjack.
Right? Stancic went there. We call it 700.
Yeah.
And then he went back here going. To, yeah. But they catch a lot. You just see those Australian pictures online. And you massive. See the kilos. You're like, you look first, like, 300. And it's like, no, it's 300 kilos.
Yeah.
And they're huge. And there's like little boats. They're just like weekend guys. They're not professional.
Right.
And then there's some really good charter boats.
Mm.
There, but obviously it's very, very rough, and that's like a bucket list of something to go do.
Yeah. How far offshore is it there?
I haven't done enough research yet.
I think you got to go pretty far.
Because if I'm going for like 3 weeks. I'm dumping the old savings account.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to go there,
I would like to do Alaska.
I'd like to do
just something completely different from what we do.
I could do the Halibut.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the guys I grew up fishing with, this guy, Joe Calandra, his name's Eyeglass Joe. He goes out of Tanaku Lodge. He goes up there he specializes in like catching big ones because he's psycho and he's from New York.
Yeah.
He's like, 40 pound king salmon. That's a trophy. And he's like, he'll tell me he'll like gut it right there and smoke it back out. And everyone's like, no, and he's like, nope, that's going for bait. And he was telling me, there's all kinds of other. They have octopus. They have all kinds of crazy. But it's during our
prime time.
You could probably sneak something right before charter season.
Yeah,
right before it. But then you're like cutting yourself short. Sure. I feel.
Yeah, that's why I've never. I've never gone. He's like, you got to come. I'm like, explain to me how I'm going to take a week off in July.
I know.
And then I'm going to be frenzied out when I see like the water moved in.
Yeah.
And we're sitting in Alaska.
And you're off rhythm.
Yeah. Catching, you know, because you know you're going to catch salmon too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to catch everything. You're there. You got to do the whole bucket list of like rockfish to just catch one of everything.
Yep. And hunt there too. I'd like to do both.
It's sick. The wildlife out there is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm good on the hunting.
Yeah.
You know, I like killing animals. I don't like.
You don't like land animals?
Nah, I'm good.
I feel like if you started,
it'd be done. So it's like, everyone's like, why don't you do this? Because that's all I would do.
Right.
You know, that's all I would do. Or be just like, you guys have a nice place here in Long Island. There's huge deer. Massive. 170s, 160s.
Yeah.
Massive deers. And like, we see them all the time. They're like, on the way to the boat in the morning, we have, I mean, they're massive animals.
Yeah.
You know, massive.
Yeah. I've seen some.
Yeah, 160. Yeah. I'm like, how big is that thing?
Yeah.
Like, and then you hear like, oh, I saw an elk today. Yeah. I'm like, what an elk. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they're everyone's pets because everyone in Long Island's feeding the goddamn thing apples.
Yeah.
And they're so trained, you know, and you could literally just walk up to it and just stroke it with it, like scene from Predator. You know what I mean? Like, that would be me. I'm like, oh, here you go, little fella. Yeah. You know, like the... You know, like the guy at the end when he's standing at the log. That would be me. Like, oh, right on the apple orchard. Oh, okay, I'll feed you all winter. You know, full blood underneath the eyes. Totally. Rambo type thing.
Totally.
You know, it's a dick. It's just something you're...
You don't need any more addictions.
No.
No, you're a hunter-gatherer type individual.
It's this. It's so
just
similar.
Like fishing, it's just it's different. So and you got to focus
your
time in
on...
And obviously, you got to, just like fishing, got to put the time in, spots, right? Boat preparation, you got to be practicing during the summer. And
it's all the same.
It's just a different, it might be a little bit cheaper than offshore sport fishing.
It's more accessible.
Definitely cheaper.
Yep.
The way they behave is kind of similar, oddly, like just movement and topography and structure and all that.
And the moon, right? The moon's a big.
So there's science that's like, the moon doesn't. But then there's other guys that are like 100%
just like fishing.
Moon phase. Same
people
thing
think
fishing.
Moon does nothing, but
yeah,
I think it's like everything.
Yeah,
I'll argue someone till they're dead in the face.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, you know what? Stop believing anything. Yeah. You know what? Don't
right.
go.
The moon.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, go right on the night of the full and the night. You know,
it's all about the sun.
Sure, the tide doesn't run hard on the moon.
What's crazy actually is the amount of times I've seen, and I've been doing this. You know, I've barely scratched the surface, but in talking to buddies and people that have been hunting a long time and then fishing and all that, it's crazy how I've noticed movement during tide change times. It's like moon overhead, moon you know, underfoot. Yeah, exactly.
Pay attention to a major or minor. I got it. My buddy Eric Fawcett runs a Floridian. When we were sword fishing one day, and I'm like, all right, coming up on the major, we're gonna get a bite. And within 2 minutes, there he is.
Yep.
And he goes, wow, you really know this. I'm like, no, I could read the app pretty good. You know? It's the same thing here. Majors, minors. When you pay attention and you – and Stancic told me that a long time ago. I mean, he's a very good sword fisherman. He pays attention to all those little things. Like, you know, they get actively feeding, and same goes for a commercial fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything gets active during that period. You know, you have highs and lows. And they have charts and – and it all overlays into each other.
Yeah.
Venn diagram. Once again.
There you go.
You know, that's the only thing I think I ever learned in grade school, those three circles.
We all it's actually two circles.
Yeah. Mine have three.
I love it.
Venn diagram. That might be the other podcast.
Boys, I've been going 2 hours.
Right.
Well, this has been awesome.
We can do four easily.
I can make you guys laugh all day.
Dude, I could sit here and talk to you guys about this shit for fucking days.
We'll get you down, and I'm sure Mike would like to have you guys on the boat.
I would
live from the canyon.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
That'd be awesome.
He's throwing his hands already. He's already sick of us. He's already banned us.
He's not talking.
Yeah, just have us there to do commentary. Yeah,
just whispering.
He's not talking.
Yeah.
His hands are high.
I see dead people.
He's in a very frustrated state.
Right? Yeah. I would be.
Oh,
yeah, because I'd be nervous. You guys are there, and I'd be yelling at you. I'd be like, don't touch that. You know? I don't care how many bluefins you say. Yeah. You know, this is not your home. My home, your home, my home. My home.
We're a guest.
Out of that. You know?
Don't even look at my pink bomber.
No,
that,
no.
That would be fun to do, like our one annual canyon trip with them. Yeah. Be a blast.
Yeah, would that be fun? Would it be fun, though?
I think so. Yeah, I think they'd nail that.
Yeah.
It'd be fun for have to be, a few
you
know, minutes.
I'll even do it. It'd have to be during, like, obviously a closed day, because I'm sure you have good charters. I want to kill one of those things. But
or late
like
season.
A late season.
Yeah.
September or something like borderline weather where you already burned out of bluefin fish. You're like, I need to do something else. I can't do this anymore.
September, it's like fucking frothing to go do something different.
Yeah. I mean, because the way our weather is, we go – right? You guys go 30, 40 days in a row, and then we get a week of bad weather.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and that's when you got to leave. We leave, of course, on bad weather. I like bad weather.
Yeah.
No one else likes bad weather.
But you're also in a fucking big Viking.
Yep.
You know?
But we're a little boat. We're only 52.
True,
but
true.
It's a little boat that could. I can tell you that. I feel safer in my boat than most.
Squatty. It's a squatty hull.
And it's a very good haul. There's low center of gravity. And we've been in some hellacious weather.
Yeah.
Like weather I should be like, you know, like, I only like this stuff like gill betters, but this is not good. You know, like this is not, you know, it's nothing you could do.
Just
you deal with it. And you can't force your way out of it. And oh, well, you know, but you fish right through. It doesn't rock. We don't have a sea keeper. You know, so I don't know that nonsense. It's just going to break anyway. It's going to rip out of the boat or the orb's going to break.
Have you seen the video, the one that just takes off and like destroys the inside of the boat?
That's my biggest fear. Why? First of all, if it's that rough, I don't want to be there anyway.
Yeah.
There's, you know, and no one's getting a sense, you know, a sense of false sense of security going with me.
Yeah.
We're all getting the shit kicked out of each other. Right? Yeah. If I'm thinking of beating driving for 12 hours, you're damn well sitting on either side of me taking it as well. So,
funny.
Been fun. It's good seeing you guys.
Good to see you too. Thank you guys so much.
Absolutely. Excited to talk more this weekend.
I'm
pumped.
I feel like we do this and then we say hi to Mark like three times. He's running at 90 miles an hour.
Running 90. You know, people want to know.
Mark's like, sweating.
Yes. Yeah, you are. You do sweat a bit at Castafari.
It's a lot of talking. David's got me talking for 13 fucking hours. You know. In a row. You know, oh, Mark, you don't have anything on Saturday, but Sunday you got to speak from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. straight. And you have one break and you're trying to eat lunch and you're literally trying to hide in your booth or someone else's booth. And someone who doesn't want to ask a question, I don't know, in front of 150 people, like trying to eat something. They see you're eating, you know.
Mark's pissing in a bottle at the podium.
And every year, you know, David, I tailored your schedule pretty good. Really, David? I don't present anything until 5 p.m. on day one. I got to rig bait, and I got to shower because the bait room's disgusting.
We're rigging bait for the first time this year.
That's good, though.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
We're excited.
Damon's going to love that.
Yeah.
Just razzing on him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's good.
Your father's three words?
Yeah.
The hook and a water?
Yeah.
The one thing... I was taught by Captain Phil, sometimes we take our hooks out of the water.
We do too.
All right. We do. Yeah, it's always been like a catchy thing of mine because Phil doesn't listen to these. Who knows what he's doing?
You know?
But he told me if we can't get a bite sometimes, and we've seen it with the elephants too, and take the rods out of the water.
Yep.
And it's ballsy. You know, they see the line, whatever it is.
The weight, whatever.
Keep chumming.
Yep.
Get them happy like a dragger does.
It's definitely situations where we do that. Overall.
Yeah, overall. I'm sure the guy who's paying a lot of money to come fishing.
Like, yeah. Take it all out. Let's hang it out for a bit.
Yeah. Guys, what do you want for the grill? I'll start cooking.
Yeah. So thanks, boys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Appreciate it. Back to OG's three words of wisdom we'll end it on. Remember, you can't catch them if you don't have a hook in the water. Always trust your instincts. And the last one, you'll have to keep listening. Stay tight, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Seabros Fishing Podcast. If you'd like more information on today's guest, products that we use, or other podcast partners, please check out the description for this episode on our website, seabrosfishing.com. For information on our tail and fish artwork commissions, or to order our hats and other products, please check out our website or shoot us a message on Instagram. Make sure you check out our YouTube channel, give it a like and subscribe. And finally, if you want to book a fishing charter with us on one of the Mass Bay Guides boats, please visit massbayguides.com and call the office to book a trip. We appreciate you all.